It's November 17th, 2010.
And this is Idle Thumbs, episode 36. We're all happily here now that Chris decided to stay in San Francisco. And Nick Brecken's
back. I hope you've been enjoying the past 14 casts.
Yeah.
This joke reminds me of that one time when we also ended the podcast.
Oh, man.
What the fuck is this?
This
we need some silence.
Is video games. Okay. Silence. It's August 26th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, episode 13.
And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Steve Gaynor.
I'm Sean Vanneman.
And I'm Jake Rodkin. And goodbye.
Chris ruins everything.
I do. I ruin all the things, including this thing. Sorry about that.
Here we are, surrounded by your boxes.
Are.
Much more packed than last time.
That's true.
It's a sweltering 104 degrees in here.
I just cried.
That's just sweat, actually.
Oh, sorry. I get confused by that.
They're both salty.
Yeah.
As is your disposition tonight.
My salty disposition.
Yeah.
What is this, your third to final day? Fourth to final day of being a San Franciscan?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's something around that.
Yeah.
And then you become a douche.
I was thinking Bostonian, but I guess.
Oh, no, I don't care where you're moving.
The proper term is douche. You haven't spent a lot of time in Boston.
Whoa.
And neither have I. I'm just...
You just know.
casting aspersions.
Sweet.
On their
own. Anybody heard about the new the Bioshock game? Anybody seen anything about this?
Minerva's Den? Wow. Really early for a plug, Steve.
No,
that's
not
what
I was going for. Man. Infinite.
Yeah.
Oh. The infinite expanse of Bioshock. Have you heard about it?
I heard about that game.
Oh, yeah.
So you're just going to talk about everything about it.
Well, you've been making it in stealth for the last few months.
Yeah, for quite a while.
you've been emailing
since 2007.
Yeah.
Updates to the source
code.
You've
been faxing them updates.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been getting some screenshots.
It's been a long... That's why it took so long to get to the point where it could be announced. It was a very laborious process.
Well, how's it going?
Oh, with the faxing? Pretty good.
Just a couple more faxes and then you'll be on site.
Yeah, the last few of Chris's...
And you can just write the notes directly on Ken Levine's desk and not have to fax it to him. Much more convenient.
Well, that's good. I don't know. Irrational Games adheres to the aesthetic of the System Shock 2, so Chris will still, in fact, fax them to Ken Levine, where they'll appear on his cyber screen.
Across the room.
By which I mean a green piece of glass hovering over his right eye at all times.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
He holds up a scream sheet in front of it, which the piece
then
of glass...
Then it picks out the most relevant articles to his eyeball.
Well, I think the scream sheet just has, like, code on it, and then the green piece of glass
interprets that into...
That's about right.
Newspapers will consist entirely of faxed source code parsed by iBeam.
Man, Irrational's weird.
Yeah, it's a pretty
cool... Wow, the studios I've worked at haven't really been like that, but it sounds interesting.
Well, I mean, you know... That's why Irrational has the reputation they do. They're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Yep.
For doing shit real weirdly. Did you guys watch the trailer or what?
Jake had some super thoughts about the trailer. We talked about it over lunch, over sandwiches.
That was like 4 weeks ago or
something. I know. You had a turkey and cranberry with coleslaw sandwich. And I had vegetarian chili in a bread bowl. I remember it exactly.
Wow.
Well, why don't you just tell us what
Jake
said
about it? Because I also remember that sandwich. It was delicious.
Yeah, well, Jake had one major point, which was... you know.
This is a pretty awesome discussion.
That having coleslaw on this sandwich is a really great
advantage. Oh, that was his question, actually. Because coleslaw is such a mainstay in American food culture, do you feel as if there is coleslaw in Colombia as sort of representational food metaphor for what is it to be an American? Did you fax that in?
I declined to fax in that particular spec.
That one got garbled and it wasn't worth it.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Mm.
Some sort of
I do think what the move for the franchise is really cool. Yeah. I don't know why I'm directing it towards you as if you now represent the franchise, which you do, I guess, in one way or another.
Which means you can't talk about it on this podcast.
But the three of us can.
Steve probably can't either. John Williams is now owed 18 cents.
We'll talk about that after that. Yeah, whoa.
Bioshock, Bioshock: back into Samuel Jackson's arm.
Whoa. Spin-off
They're really broadening the settings.
I'd heard that Ken was a fan of the podcast. Now, proof. Absolute proof.
He just picks up a phone. Get me that arm. I guess I could just model it.
They had top scientists. they had top scientists scan in and articulate that
they
arm.
They kidnapped Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
And then
they
scanned his arm.
Samuel Jackson's DNA and then put it in amber.
And then cloned it in an embryo.
For several million years. And then,
a mosquito bit Samuel Jackson, which they sent back in time, trapped it in amber.
Right. They just wanted
Ken
to
Levine has
authentic.
That cane now? Yeah. He has that cane that has
a mosquito
an
Samuel
embryo.
Jackson's
or, yeah,
DNA.
And an amber sphere that has a mosquito that has Samuel Jackson's DNA.
And they cloned a Samuel Jackson arm.
Just the arm, though.
Just the arm.
Like in The Fifth Element.
You guys have amazing budgets.
Yeah.
Wow.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say amazing butts.
Well, you're supposed to hold on to your butts.
You're supposed to hold on to them, exactly. Yeah.
They're so amazing, I want to hold on to them.
Hold on to. On which to hold.
That's so crazy. So, we're now finding out, this is a pretty big scoop
Speaking
for us,
of hot scoops,
that,
I don't know if
Samuel Jackson
any
is in the new Bioshock.
Yeah.
You are now... Are you going to give him the hot scoops mantle that he is now going to tell us details about the new Bioshock game?
I bestow upon you,
that's how
Chris
you got
Remo,
it.
The mantle of hot scoops as you depart this podcast and ascend into the echelons.
I don't know about that.
Where are the scoops with pride?
Yeah.
Wow. Chris Hot Scoops Remo.
Where are these scoops in good health?
And Steve Gunga Galunga Gainer.
All right. I'll take that
trade. Fair trade. I do think I was trying to make a point.
Yeah.
Not about coleslaw, but
coleslaw
this
powers
Bioshock you. Being, and this is kind of, I don't know, did you read the John Teddy preview?
No, I didn't.
He writes for the AV Club and he's a really good guy. And
yeah, I've read stuff.
I'm really happy. I always like the way he writes and the way he reports on stuff. But him talking about Bioshock, and I don't know if this was said in the press conference, so I might just be giving credit where it's not.
That press conference looked crazy, by the way. Anyway. Yeah.
But Bioshock is being like a label now for kind of a reinterpretation of like Americana via this lens that is, I guess, Ken's lens.
Yeah.
But that's very cool.
Yeah. I don't think that was explicitly stated, but I think that's the implication that rather than being a particular setting or canon or universe or whatever, Bioshock is more just... how do you express ideas about like particular facets of American history or life or culture, through whatever.
So you're going on
crazy
record saying that's
I don't know.
I watched an interview
with Ken where he spoke directly to that, but he didn't actually address any of the fictional stuff. It was all Bioshock isn't any specific set of ideas.
Right.
It's like you go into a fantastical world.
Ideology as hilarious city.
not really. It's just like...
Well, that's what seems to be the case in the first day.
I'm trying to quote here. I'm trying to paraphrase.
Steve,
paraphrase.
More like Skyoshock. Am I right?
I don't think that was... No, that doesn't sound like what he said.
I'm pretty sure he had that shirt on.
Put your words into his mouth. Go for it.
Creepy.
And put those regurgitated words into our ears.
I know this is just a joystick interview. He was talking about like player choice and being able to play your way and go to an immersive, fantastical place that feels real because you are in it, But like the specifics are not what defines Bioshock. It's more of like that player experience. And I don't know. Maybe that extends to and it reexamines our culture through this lens. But that's the kind of thing that it might just be.
Circumstantial.
That might not necessarily. Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's
absolutely.
Really
I think
native to Bioshock
For the near term future, it's probably a moot point anyway. Given the fact that this game will have come out, 5 years after Bioshock, the thought of whatever Irrational does after this game is probably so far in the future.
Yeah, even if it has the Bioshock,
it's sort of an entirely academic.
Sort of,
they are establishing though the exponential distance scale.
That's true.
Bioshock, if you look at sort of the exponential ramp going, slowly, and then whoa,
Bioshock
and
to Bioshock 2, is
right? Bioshock to Bioshock 2, it's like you're kind of it's in Rapture, then a different part of Rapture, then we launch up to the sky, and then the next jump is
like
hopefully
logarithmic. It just
yeah
yeah
is Moonshock.
No, Space Station. Bioshock
space
4.
Station Space Shock.
Yeah. Like and then episode 5, that scale goes all the way out to the moon.
Bio moon, like, moonshot.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Fucking moonshot.
Then the next one, you've got to be in like a parallel universe or some shit. I mean, at that point, once you start getting exponential.
It's actually just in a black hole. That's it. It's just the edge of existence.
It's Bioshock beyond the infinite.
Oh, man. Oh, shit.
TM copyright Idle Thumbs 2010 2010
yeah regular,
I think we're it's actually copyright.
We should register that URL. Oh, yeah. Do you know there's Bioshock.com squatted?
Yeah, Bioshock.com is now under
it's been squatted like, for yeah. like a long time from yeah. some like
since 2004
yeah apparently since before the trademark for Bioshock was registered yeah.
It's up for debate whether or not the space station Bioshock is the 80s like sort of 70s 80s Cold War NASA style or if that's the moon base but one of those two is probably going to be.
I feel like the 60s.
One of them's going to look kind of like Skylab, and one of them's going to kind of hopefully look kind of like 2001. That's my hope. And that's confirmed by Chris Remo of Irrational Games.
Jesus. Oh, Chris Hot Scoops Remo just let us know that Jake Video Games Rodkin is art directing Bioshocks 4 and 5.
From this chair. It doesn't have arms.
He will have the facts eye for us.
That's true.
Fast forward 8 years, an Idle Thumbs forum goer quotes this when both of those things are true.
Yeah. But you won't be playing that Bioshock game with a controller
in your hand. Instead, you'll be using a sweet skateboarder peripheral.
Was the quote a controller in your hand?
Yeah, it was in your hand.
A controller, comma, in your hand makes it sound way more just like
well, that's,
dirty.
That's because it was still a controller. It was foot controller. You know,
it's like those toe gloves or socks, right. The glove socks,
or toe shoes.
They're called toe shoes.
Oh, the rubber like the sandals that have.
Yeah. Oh yeah, right.
Those just come with a gross beard.
Shoes. Yes, they're horrible. I'll go on the record of saying that they're horrible.
Yeah,
I'm sure they're.
But that's how you'll explore the surface of the moon in Bioshock 5.
But there might be like a diode in each little toe thing. I mean, yeah. You know,
there'll be sensors.
It's toe force feedback. It's a haptic response.
Like a servo in there somewhere.
Probably a servo.
So what else is going on in the world?
Really, I will say. I mean,
what were you actually going to say about the game?
We had some very salient thoughts.
Yeah, Jake wanted to talk about this, and now he's.
Oh, I don't remember.
Think past the coleslaw.
I mean, It's the same thing that everyone has talked about at this point, which is just the stuff like. Are these games in the same universe, or is it Final Fantasy style? Sort of, I think that's what we were talking about because it was like the day the trailer came out, and we were like, "Oh, what did it?"
Right.
And I really hope that they are just completely separate, and that there isn't even a tiny thread going between. Because I really, really, really like Rapture and Andrew Ryan and all that stuff, and the idea that it's now it would potentially be retconned so that Andrew Ryan built Rapture. Because he was inspired by this other enormous ideology as city that existed when he was a kid, would as a fanboy of Bioshock, it would kind of disappoint me. Unless there's some brilliant, brilliant thing that they can do to twist that around that makes me just go, oh, shit. But I'd almost rather they just keep it clean. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, it's the implication that, I mean, the internet, at least right now, seems to think that they're separate things. Yeah. Like,
because when
like
you crash
Final
in
Fantasy.
That plane in the first minute of the first Bioshock, you don't have...
Right, the guy's like, oh, good, it's like Columbia! Like, you know... It's like it's
the one sentence your character says.
Right,
the
patch
entire,
that in.
It's like the Valve Portal style patch.
Right.
Where you go back and,
yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, you read the article. There was some article about a little kid where someone made them watch the Star Wars. What? Oh, yeah. You hear it echoing.
It's narration. Yeah, I can't really tell. I guess he wasn't saying
but
it.
But like, what at the beginning of the? He does talk. Track.
Yeah, but
he says
sort
something
of like
"I'm destined for great things."
I always
things.
Interpreted that as like internal monologue.
Yeah, that
me
seems
too.
Like it to me.
But yeah. Jake's like that implies speaking with the actual mouth.
His internal monologue could just be underwater. I don't see any problem with that.
Yeah, it reminded me, like, I read an article that where someone asked their kid to watch Star Wars 1, 2, 3 and then watch 4, 5, 6 and the kid was like,
fuck that kid.
The kid was like, I guess Chewbacca's the only Wookiee that survived the Clone Wars. And it's like, what is... That's your takeaway? Like, weird. So if Infinite is in the same world, it would therefore be a prequel, and wait, then I would be
so the kid. Which ones did the kid watch first?
The kid watched them in chronological order. So when he
so
got
the
to the sequels,
first.
When
canonical,
he got,
oh,
when he got to 4, 5, 6, when he got to A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, he was like, oh man, Yoda looks weird. Oh man, I guess only Chewbacca survived out of all the Wookiees. Where's the, like, yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's so mean.
Did you guys see,
their
by the way?
Their one social experiment just ruined Star Wars for that poor kid.
Yeah, I know. Did you? This is probably a little outside of the scope of Idle Thumbs, but real quickly, did you guys see
the
interview
last one, fuck it.
Let's Gary, talk about Gary Kurtz talking about Star Wars stuff?
Yeah. I mean,
that was a really interesting interview. That really, like,
you're not a big enough Star Wars dork to have known that story existed before that interview, apparently.
What, which
the
story?
Just Gary Kurtz versus George Lucas.
I mean, I love
about the ending of the third movie.
Yeah, about just yeah. He,
okay, well, that might, okay. So I'm sure all that shit name. Is. I'm sure all that shit is common knowledge.
Well, no, I didn't know that until I assume we're talking about the same stuff. Either. Or he was talking about
the guy
original
who was. He was like Lucas's like sort of at least like sort of tacit creative partner on American Graffiti and the first two Star Warses, and then. Everyone is always like, oh, George Lucas just needs an editor. George Lucas just needs someone to tell him no. Whoops, that guy totally existed and then was deleted.
Yeah, yep. Well, no, I mean, it was interesting to me because I love the first two Star Wars movies a lot. And I'm not really like a huge fan of the third one. And I couldn't give two shits about the prequels. And it was interesting to read that guy's statements and be like, oh, man, this is exactly how I feel about the first two Star Wars movies. And that's exactly why I'm like a little less enthusiastic about the third one and why the other ones are just... bullshit. Like, I just couldn't, you know.
It's important contributions to canon.
All right.
It kind of, you like canon, don't you? It kind of it reminded me of that that line from, wasn't it, you did the interview with Fergus Urquhart about Fallout New Vegas, and he was talking about Fallout 1 and 2.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and there was that one line in it that I had a similar feeling where I think you asked about, like, what was up with the tonal differences between Fallout 1 and 2? And he was just sort of like, well...
That was a good response.
I was a lead designer on the first game. On the second game, I was project lead and had way more shit to handle. And so, like, the designers occasionally would say, like, hey, I'm going to put some tongue-in-cheek stuff in my part. And I was like, all right. And I didn't keep a close enough eye on it. And then it shipped. And there was just jokes everywhere.
Everyone sort of assumed, I'll be the one guy who does this.
Yeah. And
I'll have the wacky part.
And they built that game in like 8 months. Right. So there just wasn't a ton of oversight. And
well, I think they like basically restarted it at one point during that 8 months.
Well, no, I think it was like a year and a half or two-year project. And then they restarted it. With, anyway. I read that and I was like, that totally makes sense.
Yep.
I thank you for like... I now understand why I felt that way about those games. Like, it's cool to see those kinds of things from the inside.
Exactly.
Even if it takes like 10 or 12 years after it's released.
Look how we tie that into video games. Jesus, we're so good.
It was a super sick seg.
It was a great seg.
It was ultra seg.
Yeah.
I just got 4x combo points for that.
Wow.
It was a combo
breaker.
No, I have the combo.
Oh, you haven't used
it? No one broke it. It was unbroken. There was an amazing seg in there.
Oh, you just broke it because now we've got off. Now it's all back.
You're the fucking combo breaker.
Thank you for the combo breaker.
Way to go, famous.
God.
Not so famous anymore.
That's true.
Infamous.
Your new super catchy more nickname like is going to be Combo Breaker Vanaman.
That's fun.
Because you break combos.
Oh, okay.
What else has been going on in the world of fucking video games?
I played the first like a couple hours of Kenan Lynch 2.
Oh yeah, those are the good hours of that game.
I saw a bus ad for that today.
I saw an ad for it on Steam. It was all of Steam.
Yeah, that's true.
He's got milk eye. He's got the Geordi LaForge milk eye. He's got like the...
Well, that's a pretty common thing in video game characters to have the scar running over the eye and the discolored eye. Yeah,
that's a classic move.
It's one
of the great moves of video game character design.
Remember when I wanted to put that in Jurassic Park? Milk Eye. It's not in there, but yeah.
Oh, there were some good things that we can't talk about.
Oh, yeah, I know. One day we'll do the...
Let's not go there. What were the first 2 hours of Kenan Lynch 2 like?
It was interesting.
Fallout because we talk about Geordi LaForge, Milk Eye. Sorry, go ahead.
Good job.
It
was... Yeah, it is.
It is, actually.
It is quite hot.
It's the worst.
In here, so take off all your clothes. No, it was really, it was like very striking.
What you
play,
meant
to
say
to
was
play the,
swap it like it's hot.
That's true.
Antec, believe it.
It was strange to play the first couple hours of that game because the obviously IO. I mean, it's beyond obvious that IO really likes.
Well, that was the slogan
I guess
for Kenan Lynch
too, Michael
by the
Mann
way.
Films a lot. Yeah. Is that kind of scene is like the main touchstone there, and they really like just went balls out. For that aesthetic permeating like every aspect
balls
of the game.
Out is the worst hand gesture just now.
Oh, did I?
Oh, the balls came all the way out.
You implied that balls were in fact out
like
and presented.
Ball,
yes, the balls
on a silver
were,
plate.
Yes,
the dinner remover is lifted.
It was more just like
dinner
from,
remover.
Anyway, the dinner revealer.
Dinner revealer. That was...
I don't know what the silver thing is called. When we played a lot of Smash Brothers Brawl, like assist characters and various things, come out of the stupid thing that a butler will use to reveal your fucking dinner. I don't know what it's called. The thing that keeps your dinner warm, the silver bell
keeps
thing.
Keeps it hidden at least.
Yeah.
And someone puts their balls in it as a dinner revealer.
Our friend Mike kept being like, oh, it's the dinner revealer, and Waluigi is inside of it or whatever. Yeah. Like. Anyway, so now I always think of it as a dinner revealer.
I like that.
So anyway.
So Ken and Lynch 2, they were definitely...
Exposes your balls.
They opened the dinner revealer to reveal your balls, which were out.
Yeah, and...
To what ends?
they used that strange maneuver to craft a game that is really, 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 really dedicated to that, cell phone video, really like shaky cam aesthetic
YouTube
in a way that
distortion
like really it's really extreme. I mean, it looks like, you know, the
well, that's why
the
all the ads have like passed on deliberately to the, shit JPEG compression
exactly like it looks like the sort of weird impromptu footage that like just some dude sends to the local news station and it was so
it's like Cloverfield.
I didn't see that movie, but I mean it seems like that's what that was but I was playing it, and within the first 20 minutes, it took me a really long time to get over the like sneaking assumption. Like, I kept thinking, whichever guy you control, Lynch, was literally gonna like turn around and like look at the camera guy. Like, it really, really, really feels
he was
like
gonna documentary it up
actual,
the most.
There's an actual documentary.
Well, it's Ken and Lynch and Joe Pesci videotaping it.
The entire game is shot with like handheld, you know, like camera motion.
But there's no actual guy there, right? I mean, like, in the fiction, did you beat the game?
There's a guy there.
It's so, like, they go for that to such a degree expected there to be a dude.
Yeah. Did you guys ever see the Spanish movie Wreck? They remade it into that movie Quarantine. In the US. It was like a horror movie, and it took place entirely in an apartment building that was, like, shut down.
I saw the trailer
for it. There was, like, a zombie outbreak, basically. It's an interesting movie. I think you'd like it. You should watch it. But the whole movie is, like, predicated on this two-person news team goes to... They're filming it, right? And so, like, the entire movie, there is a cameraman in it, but he doesn't, like, put down the camera or anything until the very end. So people are, like, addressing him, and he's, like, climbing around on shit, and, like, the camera and the cameraman are important parts of the film. And it's really cool.
But Ken and Lynch 2 didn't do that.
Ken and Lynch 2, it was just the treatment of a floating cam.
Well, there was another movie I forget that I saw. I forget if it was
The Blair Witch Project.
French film, maybe, about a documentary film crew that follows a serial killer around and like documents his daily routine as a serial killer. And I mean, it was like a fairly disturbing movie. Because they really, you know, they really sell it like that. I mean, it really looks like it was just filmed by these kids going around at the serial killer. And same basic concept. But it was weird to see it in a game, you know, where it's not acknowledged, but everything's still dynamic. Because, you know, in a film, it's less in your face because things just sort of happen in a very prescribed manner. Whereas in a game, when you stop, you know, you start running and you go into that really crazy shaky mode and you stop running because you just decide to. And then it kind of just slows down to a little bit of a swim. And like it reminds you of it much more.
Like that specific aspect too, like they really make the presence of the camera. Yeah. And like part of the AV, because when you do that sprint, it has the wind rushing past the mic.
And that's the kind of thing that becomes really easily broken, because once I noticed that, I started running for like half a second, then stopping, then running for half a second, stopping. And it becomes absurd. Which makes me, and it made me really reflect on just how, like, what is the place for that kind of thing in games? You know, what's the place of making, I mean, is it possible to make a game that's really unpleasant to play? Like, there are certainly movies that I have
found... It's possible.
I mean,
deliberately aesthetically?
Right, deliberately.
You know what I just pictured? There is, like, that kind of... I think that's kind of explored by people like Mark Essen, you know, and some of, like, the indie guys who have, like, these kind of punishing AV setups for their games. But the thing it just made me picture, like, an indie game
Which guy is that?
Messoff. He's
no.
The guy
which games though?
That weird Atari looking fencing game Nidhogg that is currently passing around. Like, he did Fly Wrench.
That's what I was thinking. Yes. Okay. Yeah. That.
So there's that kind of stuff. It's not in like the AAA space at all. But I just pictured an indie game that's like a third person shooter, very standard over the shoulder first person shooter, but it's co-op and one person is the person shooting, the other one is the cameraman, and you have to work together so
it's like,
they can
get me in the shot.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, so that you like, can see who you're shooting at. Like, yeah, that'd be weird.
That would have been the best Cannon like, Lynch 2, actually. If
I was hoping. Yeah,
that would be the best. If it's just like
wanting that game.
That's now on the internet. So.
Well, because I mean, there's stuff like Michigan Report from Hell that I never played because it was never released in North America. But
and like Hellcab,
a grasshopper game where you play. As far as I'm aware, like a cameraman who's basically filming like a zombie invasion.
Yep.
Which is, and there's Fatal Frame.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
Fatal
stuff.
Frame. You just use a camera as the player.
Yeah, oh, I love that. I mean, anytime. I wish games made that more of a thing. Like,
yeah.
As opposed to just research and points. Like, if Dead Dead Rising had been more about that, I would have really enjoyed that game.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, beyond just the notion just of like the sort of camera aspect, you know, it was interesting to me that. There were times when that chosen deliberate aesthetic was really like disorienting and weird and
that would actually be really cool, like the like something that you're just that you just reminded me of is like, you know how when you get knocked down in that game and you just press a button to like stand up, it would be awesome if the cameraman was a character, and when you hit A to get up, it does a camera animation of the guy like
he reaches out, and the camera kind of up, and then that was a third position.
Oh, like if you see the cameraman actually bail you out.
The lens kind of tilts a bit as he loses his full control over it, and he reaches
and
out
and you see his arm reach out from first person, pick you up, and then he goes back to being the cameraman. Like
Far Cry 2 hand goes flying in for a second, and then he takes a malaria pill.
That would be interesting. Like,
well,
because
what I was actually picturing is like, if he was there, he'd probably have a sidearm and like be trying to defend himself. And I was like, it'd be hilarious if every once in a while you got near an enemy and you just see a hand reach.
And I was like, that would
never happen, but he could help you up.
And it would definitely say, Baba Booey.
No, I mean, that would be amazing if the perspective of your character that you're playing is different than the perspective of the actual game, like, window to the game world. I mean, that would be... There's no reason you couldn't do it. I mean, we already work with disconnected, like, semi-floating
cameras. This exact same thing has already been done, though.
What?
In Mario Kart.
Yeah, because
it's a little clock that falls, and then he picks you up off a rainbow.
That's not really... No, it's extended to the world, though.
Well, Steve's ripped it off.
But I think it's actually funny, though,
I'm
right?
I'm kidding.
Because it's like, it's one of those things where it's
Lucky too. It's like cameraman in Mario 64.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's weird, right? Is because like the first time there was like a three-dimensional orbiting camera, Miyamoto was like, well, we have to justify why there's a camera floating around
and
you.
And you can see Lakitu's fucking liberal bias in the way that Mario 64 is presented. Fuck that guy.
What? In his documentary of the cart race.
Yeah, he only shows certain events in Mario 64.
You can see what he focuses on.
What about
on.
The stuff you don't see? What about the Mario 64 cutting room floor? Oh. All like, the shit Mario just lays to waste? Fuck!
It's like a Michael Moore movie.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
What you don't see is the Monty Mole alternative documentary. But it's because he tries to be funny and dressed like Lakitu, and it's just bullshit. He finds his fat friend.
Yeah. It could never get distribution.
Yeah, it's garbage.
Yeah.
Ugh. Fuck. Yeah.
He makes some valid points.
I don't know.
But
I don't know.
Don't you find though it's just enjoyable as a game? I mean, you know. I mean, you say what you will about the point he's making. I mean, isn't the artistry of the documentary like enjoyable no matter what to you?
You know what I have to say, Chris? Fuck everything. Video games should be fun. fun.
I like fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are you going to say about Cannon Lynch 2?
I think I'm done.
I just like the idea of that shit coming all the way back.
Oh, wait,
around.
You guys.
Well, I mean...
I'm done.
Off of that, like, sort of weird tangent we have, but, like, just in terms of actual content of the game, I really, really enjoy the fact that, at least for the parts I've played... Well, no, I mean, now, actually, at the point I'm at, there aren't as many guys, but...
Whatever.
For the beginning of the game, you're basically hanging out... Like, you and your character and all the guys you're with are these really fucking dumpy, middle-aged guys with really terrible, like, tacky haircuts. Like, there's bald spots and guys with horrible, like, middle-aged ponytails, and then Lynch's weird bald head with long hair behind it. Like, this is awesome. These are the most hilarious video game protagonists.
Yeah, Kane's horrible blue felt suit with, like, awful-looking
so
first door tie.
Yeah.
I fucking love it. I mean, there are
a lot of flaws in the Cannon Lynch games, like a lot of flaws, but oh my god, I fucking love some of the shit that I was willing to put in these weird ass games.
The first couple of hours, I think, of Cannon Lynch 2 is really interesting and a lot of fun.
Although I do have to say, even in that amount of time, I get really tired of just going in another room and shooting 1,000 guys.
Yeah.
It gets really, really old.
Yeah, there isn't anything else in the game, but like the environments I think are really interesting, really, really well realized.
Yeah.
I love just being in like their version of crazy scummy like Shanghai that looks like it comes out of what's the the fucking movie, the John Woo movie, you know,
Hard Boiled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, like that stuff is cool.
Yeah.
And then it kind of falls off. And it's I mean,
I mean, whoever art directed this game did a really good job because all of the, like, the muzzle flashes and the lens flares and everything really, like, merged
the light
with
bloom.
the neon signs and just the weird
ton of light bloom.
Yeah, there is a ton. Yeah, but I actually like it in this game. I don't usually like indiscriminate bloom, but
it's whole,
in this game,
the whole
thing
inside
fits
a shitty
together
camera. Yeah.
to create this crazy, just like oppressive modern ultra mega city thing. I mean, it's just the whole thing comes together visually surprisingly well.
Yeah,
in ways that would be really obnoxious in most games. I mean, it's actually used cohesively in this one.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So what else is going on?
Martin Goldbeck.
What?
Martin.
What about
Martin?
Him?
He was the art director.
Oh, good job, Martin.
Oh, thanks.
Was it called Land? I don't know. Is that right?
What?
Candlemas
yeah,
2?
Yeah, yeah.
Dog Days?
Ooh.
He might have been on the first one.
Dead Men.
This is 2. No.
Okay, well,
whatever.
A guy did a thing that was good. I heard you guys played the Lara Croft and the Diablo of Diablo.
Yeah, it is.
It's not very Diablo-y, except for the isometric perspective.
It is very Diablo-y, I think.
You don't destroy very many creatures.
You destroy tons of creatures, and you destroy tons of...
I heard the game
was
like nothing but shooting.
Not compared to when I played Diablo.
All creatures and crates.
What game? What other gameplay is there in it?
You destroy pots?
Wait. There's mad jumping.
It's puzzle solving.
Oh, okay, cool.
I mean, but the environmental puzzle solving, yeah.
There's a ton of puzzle
stuff. Step on this button. Right, oh, that does this thing. Go over there, do that thing. Oh, wait, I need that thing to do... Yeah.
And it's really cool. Did you play it co-op or single player?
Single player.
I played a single player too, but
we both play co-op together?
Co-op's not out until
you can play it locally.
Oh, locally.
Yeah.
So the co-op's not out.
You could have come over.
You're blatantly not a games journalist anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be surprising how much fewer shit you know in like a month about.
You'll start saying things like how much fewer shit.
Shut up.
When I don't have to write a sentence anymore.
We're gonna talk about Lara Croft. So, Yeah, we should have played that cooperatively because that would have been good. I felt like, I mean,
I really like the single player, and I'm really impressed by the fact that they reworked so much stuff.
The mapping of those very classic isometric mechanics to the controller is fantastic.
Yeah,
it feels very, very good. It feels very tactile.
All the low level design stuff is super good. The movement is great. You'll love it, actually, Chris, because you can just constantly mash the X button
and
be rolling around.
Rolling's all right.
You'll like it.
All right.
It's a dive forward roll, and you have like full control while you do it.
No, I expect to like the game.
Oh, you have control while you roll. You have full roll
really?
control
while you roll.
Sold. Extra bot.
Day one perch.
You can do like little tiny circles while rolling. Like,
well, no, that day one PC perch will be perched.
Oh, cool.
Day one perch.
The PC perch.
A classic fish.
Oh, the PC version isn't out yet.
The day the Xbox, I don't know, this must have been a weird timed exclusive thing, but
the day the Xbox finally dies, PC will reign.
Because they're probably, it's probably
the
because
day
they
the day
suck
the
box.
Xbox 360 mm-hmm. version gets online co-op is when the PSN and PC versions come out.
Sorry, this sounds like an ultimatum. The day
really
the Xbox gets online co-op is the day we'll
the
put
day
out
that
the PC
I
one.
Put a bullet in my brain.
Oh, that's in like a week.
Oh, shit.
So I guess BioShock Infinite's going to go unfinished then. That makes sense, because they probably had to
my will
slot
will
it into
include
the summer
the final
of arcade.
Faxes.
That's kind of cool that they were like allowing them to be kind of creative about how to get the game out for the summer of arcade the right way.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, that's probably why they had to do that.
Yeah. I'm enjoying the hell out of it, though.
Yeah, I think I need to play it cooperatively. I told my roommate when I left to record this podcast, hey, play this game and let me know if you like it, because then we'll play cooperatively, because I don't think I'll stick with it if I play it
really?
Myself.
I like the first game he's played since Far Cry 2, since he exploded.
He got pissed at Far Cry 2 when a grenade rolled to his feet.
I heard a grenade rolled down a hill one time.
That's all that happens in that game.
It's
essentially
rolled
down, it's
like that Sony Bravia commercial, except with grenades.
Except with one grenade.
Yeah.
And then your buddy's at the bottom of the hill, and then you're at the hill also.
But I would play that cooperatively. Otherwise, I don't know if I'll
game.
I don't know. I think they did a great job of making it a totally valid single-player experience, even though it was built for co-op. Like, my understanding is they reworked all of the levels and like Lara's abilities to play single-player.
That's cool.
Because there's stuff where it was like, you have to step
it's
on
like
two buttons at once.
Four swords
yeah.
style.
And they'll do stuff like they will spawn in additional things so that you have a little puzzle to like weight it down with a block.
There's
or something.
There's a lot of big heavy balls
you
got to roll around.
Yeah.
That's
which is actually
that's
a lot
of fun. Effort, especially considering a lot of people are going to be totally done with that game by the time co-op comes out, or online co-op.
Yeah. But because also apparently,
but I guess it'll give people a reason to, if
it does
it's actually
feel like
substantially
a game
different
that,
game, then.
It does feel like a game that where local co-op is probably very fun.
Yeah.
It has that sort of.
They also did the cool thing where they consolidated the two players apparently in co-op have different abilities. Like the
the second player, the Aztec guy, can like throw a spear that sticks into walls, and then Lara can like jump on top of them to get up higher.
Such
and stuff.
A better cooperative game than
and
single player.
Like, in throw single me player, a spear. Yeah, because in single player,
I mean, come on, throw me a spear well, here, like, guys. Really, please.
Like that aspect of it. Because yeah. Did you know? Okay, there's that first.
It's got
first
roll control. It's got throw me a spear mode.
The first time that those like the more tough guys show up.
Yeah,
it's got the more tough guys.
Fuck yeah.
Sean Bannerman, video game writer.
Throw me a spear and the more tough
video game
guys
writer,
debut
not video
album.
Game talker.
control roll control.
But you know, there's that glowing room, and you get on there, and you have to throw a spear across the way to flip the switch, and then the one gate goes up.
Sure, yeah.
That was very difficult. It was tough as one person.
Remember that part in that game where you have to open a button and the door opens?
He said the first part.
Does this game have Diablo-style, like, time to die, except Lara Croft will say things like, throw me a spear.
Throw me a spear.
Roll control.
This is for you. Time to die.
Tough guys.
Yeah.
More tough
I was
guys.
So surprised. I mean,
tough guys.
I don't know.
Tough guys.
I had,
more
the problem
tough
with this
guys.
Game is like creatively. I had it in my head, just completely. I don't. And this is obviously there's no imagery to support this or messaging. But I had it in my head that it was going to be Lara Croft and like her cute friend. It was just
like,
I had.
Like
oh, I mean, it was like.
Whoa,
I mean, it was. I was beyond.
Like
I had already confirmed
dude.
It in my head. Like, oh, it's going to be like Barbie and Skipper. Like it was going to be like Lara Croft and like Cindy. Right. But it's not. It's
Lara Croft and the tween Lara Croft.
I don't know, like her, like cousin.
That's you want to,
like her cousin who's like from New Jersey.
Her hot roommate.
And, like,
that's kind of curious, you know, really open to new experiences.
Sean Vanaman had a really
Sean
particular.
Sean Vanaman.
I just expected a certain thing, and I didn't get it. And I got Aztecman. And
you got what?
Aztecman, Aztec guy.
Oh,
general resurrected Aztec
man.
Yeah, and I wish he had. This is a dumb thing to say, but I wish he had an accent.
Is he just
Lara, let's go. Here's a spear.
Well,
throw it on the wall.
Like, throw me a spear.
Like all
throw me a spear here.
I mean, throw come on.
Like all ancient Roman people and stuff, I think he has kind of a British accent.
Yeah.
Like a deep man British accent.
He doesn't have a
thing.
British accent.
Isn't it sort of like that? I don't remember. He's not in it very much.
He rolls in and goes, "Hi, I'm going to be a very important person in this video game," and then gives you a spear and says, "See ya."
Yeah.
Yeah. But he has to in the single player.
Yeah. No, it struck me more than in most things where this happens that I was just like, I'm glad this ancient Aztec man can speak English when he's resurrected an ancient Mayan curse.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to Mel Gibson
speaking
directing
like
this game.
Subtitles?
Yeah.
When does that happen in video games?
Like, that they can't understand each other? It's a co-op game where they don't actually have language that they can communicate?
Like, that would have been pretty awesome.
I feel like that's not as common as
you
I'd
would,
like
you
it to be, actually.
I would have liked that.
That would have been fantastic.
There's one way they can communicate, which they will discover after their time in the team.
Yeah. At about the end of the second act.
Yeah.
In Civ 5, all the cultures, I mean, there's English, you know, subtitles, but all the cultures speak their own language. So there's Montezuma of the Aztecs speaks in like crazy ancient dead Aztec language, which is pretty sweet.
Gibsonian.
Huh?
He's Gibson.
Gibsonian.
Yeah.
I assume all you guys have seen that frame in the trailer.
The frame of him with a giant beard
he's
and
just
Apocalypse
like chopping
trailer.
Down on a cigar with a huge beard. Yeah,
yeah. It's so funny. There are these
with
weirdly...
like white painted people in the background.
Yeah. There are these really weird moments in culture where Mel Gibson's a decent person and the rest of these
where
horrible.
He's just hilarious. Like,
oh my
all right.
God! Well,
so
yeah.
He has a casting situation going on.
Yes,
yeah, find the trailer to Apocalypto. I never actually saw the movie, but I remember.
It's good.
But the trailer for that film, months before it came out, if you there's like a certain point where they're doing a really fast. Frame by frame by frame of different scenes.
And then
if you go through that in like QuickTime or something that allows you to go frame by frame and you just forward skip frame for frame, eventually there will be one that is totally out of the fictional context of the film that is just Mel Gibson with like huge Castro beard with a huge stupid grin chomping down on a huge cigar with like people with white face paint like looking from behind
the whole bunch of
extras from the film basically the background and Mel Gibson just has this big goofy ass cigar chomping grin like being a total weirdo for one frame
and then
and the only reason I saw that is because when I was for some reason super excited about that movie because it came out
and you were framing through the trailer
I'm like oh man here's all these little scenes I can look at and then I got to the one and I'm just like what the fuck is this shit and that made me want to see the movie even more and then I didn't so weird but that trailer is totally worth watching for that
this has
moment.
Been the most culturally broad Idle Thumbs
I know
to date
you shouldn't have called it out because now we're going to be like
games
Pac-Man
oh, no, I'm still going to talk about people
whatever happened to Pac-Man
we should rename this podcast like
we should rename it whatever happened to Pac-Man
we should rename it like Warp Zone Extra Life And have the icon be a Space Invader alien.
That's why I'm naming my kid.
Oh my god, Rachel's pregnant.
Warp Zone after Extra Life. On the Gainer.
Gainer. Yeah.
This is big
Warp
news.
Zone? Warp Zone. Warp Zone Extra Life, I told you. Put down that
your kid's gonna, your kid's
super
gonna grow
mushroom.
Up, your kid's going to grow up to be an author and ditch his last name and just go by WZ Extra Life.
I just like picturing the parent when they get really stern using the kid's full name. And it's that. Yeah.
Everyone called him Warp as a kid, though.
Have you guys...
What was it? Warp Zone?
Warp Zone. Okay. His full name... my full name is Warp Zone. It's like Warp Zone.
Have you have we ever mentioned the cookbook in Steve's house written by a woman named Crescent Dragon Wagon? Because that's my favorite name ever.
There's a story in the book about why she has that name. You looked at it, right?
She's a real person.
She's a real person.
This isn't like...
She's got a Wikipedia
entry. The Higgs Von whatever books by McSweeney's.
She ran away to like San Francisco when she was 16, like in the 60s, and changed her name legally to Crescent Dragon Wagon.
And her husband...
She was a big hippie.
Her new husband, they both changed their name to Dragon Wagon. They got divorced pretty soon after. He did not keep it, but she kept hers.
Is this Bronson Johnson?
Oh, no. Okay. That's fine. Never mind.
What? You're talking about
Ray Johnson? No. I'm not going to mention in front of the podcast who doesn't listen to the podcast or play games.
Sweet.
Anyway, names that are irrelevant to everyone.
Except our readers. Hi, everybody.
Thanks for giving us your time and your bandwidth.
Should we take a break?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Break. Can you take one?
Oh, that was fucking a weird shit. Fucking first half.
Oh, my God.
The heat is cooking our
Rape
brains.
Johnson.
There. Video game.
Dude, you like those 33 guys in Chile?
What?
The Chilean miners that I was telling you about?
What?
That are 2,300 feet under the surface?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
They've been down there for 3 months.
Why is he like them? I missed that.
Because he had water and he wasn't sharing.
Oh. Were they doing that to each other?
That was the only water. No, I think they're sharing now.
So it takes nothing like a Chilean miner.
No. He's also not trapped 2,300 feet in the ground.
Oh, and I thought you were referring to like a Chilean youth.
A Chilean minor.
A Chilean child.
A Chilean adolescent.
Yeah, like a Chilean 17-year-old.
Yeah.
A hot Chilean 17-year-old hanging out with Lara Croft. Getting all sweaty together.
I really had that.
That was hilarious. If that was your fucking expectation of that game.
It wasn't even like an expectation. It's not like I was sitting around going, man.
You said it was a fight you were convinced.
No, I was, but it wasn't like I was sitting around being, oh, sweet, yes. I just was...
Yeah, I knew she was going to have a hot friend. Thinking redhead.
It is,
or an Asian chick.
Both of those have been vials. Asshole.
It was hilarious.
No, it had just somehow been imprinted. That had been messaged to me somehow, and then I realized I messaged it to myself.
In your brain?
But I wasn't hoping for it.
Yeah, you were.
I was just expecting it.
Dude, bullshit.
Is
the way you were describing
that. Yeah, Skipper is the tween Barbie.
Oh, I didn't get to tell my whole story because I got cut off.
Weird.
That's not surprising. That's weird. That's strange.
I was going to be like, you know.
Oh, that was a podcast?
It's funny, somebody pointed out that your icon's Ebola. I just thought it was a really skinny penis.
Video game!
Ga 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 ga!
Galanga! That's your theme song.
McDonald's?
It's Chris Remo's. Remo's is actually what it's called.
Oh, right.
It's a fast food place that opened around the corner.
Oh, Remo's sweet tea.
Yeah, they serve sweet tea.
And
Remo's hot buns.
If you order the special, everyone on staff has to say "Gunga Galanga." Yeah.
Like, and if you tip them, they also have
you can order a side of hot scoops.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. At Remo's,
one or two scoops.
Remo's is the out of all the names here and is the one that sounds like a restaurant.
You get to decide. Whether
my
it's...
dad had a restaurant, but it was called Ernie's because his name is Ernest.
I should have called
really
it Remo's.
That's a good name for a New York restaurant, though.
It was called Ernie's New York. Yeah,
that's good.
It's a good name.
That's good.
Ernie's New York Remo.
Yes.
It was called Ernie's Gunga Galunga.
Gunga.
Yeah, that's true.
Gunga Galunga.
It was called that with the dashes and the G's.
Yeah, with the stutter.
All right, do your shit.
I'm going to talk about a thing. Video games.
Video games.
So Minerva, what's her deal?
She's the...
Does she have a den?
We don't want to release too many story spoilers at this point. We want people to discover those kinds of things for themselves, so I'm just not going to comment on that. Any other questions?
Lame.
I will say the meeting is important to the story. I just don't. Yes. Yes.
Oh, sweet, sweet. Thank you. Scoop.
But
day one.
Day perch. One. Oh, well.
You're going to say.
Perch.
Day, day one perch. With an E. It's the fish. A day one perch.
The perch doesn't have an E on the end. The fish.
It's spelled with an E. P-E-R.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true.
Day one perch. God. One of us needs to just make
that's
that.
That's the podcast title.
Day one perch.
And then a picture, the Wikipedia picture of the perch.
With the little logo.
We could blatantly American start fish. This image macro on NeoGAF by just making that stupid
day one
fish
perch.
That has a picture of the perch and says day one perch in impact in white with a stupid black outline.
Minerva's Den is a day one perch.
Though I think it would actually, I would imagine what it would be the illustration of a perch from the Encyclopedia of Britannica.
Say, yeah, exactly. Day one perch. It's the font that has the F or the S that looks like an F or whatever.
Yeah.
In italics.
Yeah. Day one perch.
This is good.
Video game.
Oh my God. I can't believe I didn't say this on the cast. I woke up last night.
You're on the cast.
At 3:30 in the morning, and I had been sleeping on my arm like this, and it was completely asleep to the point where I rolled over and it was like, and I picked it up off of my hand and I held it in the air and I was like, oh, I'm just going to hold it. It fell and landed on my face.
Oh, so that's why you replaced that with a cyborg arm.
That's why it's a cyborg arm.
Huh. I was going to ask, but I figured just wait.
Did you guys all see the cyborg eye, man?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
That's shit.
Step one.
Cyborg eye.
That's the guy. That's the guy. In Cannon Lynch 2.
Oh, with the Jordy LaForge.
It was him.
That was the guy running around.
Yeah. I'm just like, look at this. Look over here. Yeah.
That was weird.
He was licensed for... You didn't read the article.
I read it.
I read the article.
You didn't read. You didn't go to page two when it talked about how he filmed Cannon Lynch 2.
Oh, yeah.
We back?
Yeah, we're back.
Welcome back. That was a soft back in.
A lot.
Samuel Jackson's arm.
That's a lot more solid of a return from break than we have in most episodes where it just kind of fades up.
What I really like is we really hit our stride. We're really going to just blow all the way to episode 25. Just bam, bam, every week. So good.
We talked about this in episode 50.
Oh, this is what you guys did?
In the future.
Is this what it was like when you guys were talking about killing a podcast?
We kept talking.
Oh, remember next week? But there is no next
week? Yeah, we did.
There is a next week.
At PAX.
We really talked about the panel at all.
Yeah. Are you guys excited about the PAX panel thing? It seems like a cool idea.
Yeah, should be good.
Oh, yeah, Chris is just beaming with excitement right now.
I don't.
What do you keep picking on me today?
Oh, really?
I'm sorry.
Not being happy.
You know why I
got to
tell you? It's because I'm going to miss you.
I'm going to miss you too, buddy.
Oh.
How many people are going to be at the panel?
Oh, I'm going to be there.
Like four.
In the audience.
Yeah! Woo!
We're say baboo!
Say the wizard!
Woo! Sean's going to be in the audience.
I'm really worried that there are going to be only like fucking four people there because we're going at the same time as the Retronauts, and I'm pretty sure way more people
I've never
know
even
about
heard
that's
guys.
Another podcast.
Really?
It's a retro games podcast.
Outside of the community of you guys,
whoa,
way more people have heard of them than us.
No, I'm sure you guys are great.
Is that true?
I'm just saying that.
They're one up. So,
It's one up retro game podcast.
Oh, I know who this guy is.
Featuring friend of Idle Thumbs, Chris Kohler.
But people like
sometimes.
You
sorry, friend.
More. Chris
Kohler.
Remo, specifically.
People love Chris Remo.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
it's true.
Hopefully, those people come to our panel and watch us fart around on microphones.
Yeah.
I think James Spafford of the short lived Idle Thumbs UK podcast will also be there.
Nick Brecken will be there. Sean Famous Vanneman will be there.
I'll be there.
Steve Gander will be
dead. Super dumb.
Not yet.
Also, not coming to our
podcast.
If
you're thinking about wanting to see Steve at PAX, maybe send some money to questions@idlethumbs.net via PayPal. Somewhere in the neighborhood of $75.
Note that questions@idlethumbs.net does not have a PayPal account.
It can.
Yeah, don't send money to Steve. Send money to jake@idlethumbs.net. Attention, Jake.
Money.
Care of
that's
Jake. Care of Jake.
Sweet.
The check should be made out to Jacob Rodkin, actually.
Mm. The e-check?
That's the e-check.
Full name.
They faxed it with an i-fax, and then, I don't know, came out of a screen.
Probably Rocket Mail is involved.
Yeah.
The wizard is involved, Baboo.
Rocket Mail, Phaedrus.
It comes in the mouth of a puffin.
Right, puffin.
Oh, puffins.
Oh,
remember how one time...
That's a bad episode title. It comes
puffins.
In the mouth of a puffin.
That's the sequel to And Yet It Moves.
Oh.
That was a good game, by the way. That just came out on some new platform or something.
It came out on WiiWare.
Well, it came out on PC a while ago, and I played it, and it was really good. So if you want to play it on another
thing,
they put
it on WiiWare, and
PC,
now
you can
turn the world by turning your remote.
You can
waggle
it.
I don't know if I necessarily would want to do that, but you can do it if you want. It's a fun game. I really enjoy it.
I would like it if you moved the guy with one, and then you held the second Wii remote in the other hand, sort of in like the dog bone style or whatever, and so you'd... Like Robotron.
The dog bone style.
Whatever the fuck. I don't know. The WarioWare surely has a name for that, but when you just like...
You grab it like in the middle.
Oh,
yeah, like
I've never actually seen that.
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was basically...
I know. Like, it's great radio, Jake.
But like two Wii remotes. So it's like Robotron, but it's guy and world.
Guy and world. Guy meets world.
Don't
Jake's
would just...
going into professional game pitching after this.
Don't you think it would just be the
nunchuck? It's like Robotron, but it's guy and world.
No. Oh, right. I guess you would use a nunchuck. I haven't used a Wii in a long time. I forget how they work.
Yeah.
I thought you played Galaxy 2.
No, he just put it on play mode, and he watched Galaxy 2.
Yeah, I watched the MPEG-4 videos.
Nice. Ugh.
Did I talk about Galaxy 2?
No, but you said you wanted to, and you didn't, better.
Let's do it. I didn't have a whole lot to say about it, except... I loved Mario Galaxy 1.
Yeah, me too. It was a great game.
I played the crap out of it. Galaxy 2 has some nice mechanical things. Like, I really like the way that Yoshi's handled in it, where you sort of... It's, you know, you ride around on Yoshi, and he's got his little Yoshi...
So you did
sort
play
of double
game,
jump.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, I did play it.
Yeah.
The way that Yoshi works is you sort of point at stuff and he eats it, and it's sort of like a target painting system. It's actually kind of nice. It was a good use of Yoshi. But one of the things that I liked the most about Mario Galaxy 1 aesthetically is that it was awesome looking.
That's
a stupid thing to say, but just
no, it was beautiful.
Mario sort of soaring around.
Majestic.
It was great. And They did these really nice things with when you'd sort of land on a planet and the atmosphere would come up, so then you were in sort of
really
Mario 64
that,
world, and you'd fly out and you'd see there's just the infinite expanse of space.
It was really cool how they made they deliberately did not have the atmosphere be consistent, like at any sense of scale. It was entirely dependent on
and so
were.
It's
that
weird
really
that
cool.
Galaxy 2 is actually running on a Dreamcast emulator that they did it in... No. What is different about it? Doesn't it still look awesome?
Galaxy or Mario Galaxy 2 doesn't actually look as awesome because I think maybe Nintendo wanted the game to look more familiar to people who liked the older Mario games or something, but they painted sky into like 80% of the sphere of the sky spheres of like the backgrounds of the game. So as you're flying around, like you'll just sort of catch a glimpse of space through what looks like just 10 years ago's sky texture, where it's blue sky with overlapped clouds, but the clouds all for some reason still have the blue edge of the sky painted in, so even when they overlap it looks like
transparent
game
GIF.
Sprites but like, and it made me realize how much of Mario Galaxy's just sort of majesty and awesomeness came from the huge expanses of space and the way they sort of did the sort of retro style colored lights tinting it and stuff. It feels so cheap. It feels like a cheap sequel, which is just aesthetically.
Do you think that's a response to the fact that New Super Mario Brothers and that red box did so well in that system?
I don't know.
Like, we want to pull that audience in.
I don't know. It looks way more like a traditional Mario game, but to the detriment of the really, really nice... Like, there's only like two or three core Mario games that have solid visual design, I feel like, and it's like Mario 3, Yoshi's Island, Mario World and Mario Galaxy are pretty much the only ones that I thought. Like, Mario 1 looks weird.
Yeah.
Mario 64 just looks like shit. It plays well, but it looks fucking bad.
Yeah.
And Galaxy was one of the first ones that where Nintendo finally, like, it was it was so nice to see like to see a core Mario game with great aesthetics, and then Mario Galaxy 2 was like, well, this is a no-brainer. Just show me more sweet space with Mario walking around inside a glass pill that has that weird checkerboard specular highlight to look like really detailed and nice. Like, no, we'll put some really shitty sprites all over the game. Like, no, oh god. And
really,
it made me not want to play it because it just
It's too bad.
It's just anyway, Mario Galaxy 2. That's all I wanted to say. I was mad at those cloud sprites.
No, that sounds like a legitimate thing because I totally agree with you about Mario Galaxy 1. Like the sense that it was. I actually at the time remember thinking it was a really ballsy thing to do from an art direction standpoint because Mario. It was very different to how Mario usually looks in other games. Where in this game, when especially the smaller planets, you know, when you land on them, you're really like just sort of suspended in this huge dark blackness. I mean, it looked amazingly cool, but it was really like a really strange, unusual choice. And I was really glad
they
did
went
it.
Back way that familiar sucks. But it's, it, they went familiar without investing all the time and money they invested in making the new stuff look so bold.
I wonder if some of that expansive space felt overwhelming to an audience that they're now trying to appeal to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought it felt amazing.
I think it feels incredible.
It's my love of space as well documented. So
space, but
I don't know. Just even the overworld, stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, my guess. I don't know. It seems like sometimes people sort of guess.
Yep.
At that stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's exactly what I'm saying.
It was certainly not as conscious as we're making it out to be, I'm sure.
Well,
the original. I mean.
You mean the first one?
Well, no, I mean, like, I think a lot of times, well, no, I mean,
the approach
I'm sure that was deliberate, but I mean,
where it's like people surely hated that crazy bold move we made. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Well, they may not, I don't even think if they necessarily went that far. They may have just said someone just had an idea for the second thing and they didn't even really probably just.
It is
follow the train of thought as much as they.
I feel like there is definitely a calculated sort of like, no, this is who this audience is for, which is why you see new Super Mario Brothers appeal.
Yeah, but if that was, I feel like if that were the attitude taken with every Mario game, then you wouldn't have the situation that Jake describes, where only a few of them actually have a really interesting, strong, central, cohesive visual direction. I mean,
go back to the George Lucas story, right, where it's like, who was in charge? You know, like who's able to convince.
Yeah, but they may have just lucked out a few times, you know? I mean,
Mario Galaxy 2, it does feel like it's made by maybe different people.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But, I mean, Nintendo frequently does that. They mix their leads around a lot.
Yeah, but it all definitely is a really conscious choice, because if you look at the box to Mario Galaxy 2, it's like, it's literally, the background is 80% blue, stupid overlapping clouds with a little hint of space at the top, and then Mario and Yoshi flying at the camera.
Right.
Whereas the first box is
space,
a crazy planetoid filled with enemies and Mario leaping out.
I meant that people.
And they delivered on that, which is weird.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I meant that people like on the dev team guess at like changes that should be made to make the thing more appealing, whatever. But yeah, it seems like sometimes, especially if it is different people, there can be a tendency. It's, you know, whatever, like not invented here syndrome, where it's just like, we got our hands on this property, we want to change something.
Yeah, right.
Where, like, I'm the art director, I think there should be sky in this, and you just do it. And it's like, that's not taking into consideration what was strong about the property, it's taking into consideration some weird urge you have to change
for what it's worth, I'm not hugely far into the game, because, and there are some people who are just saying,
space.
Mario Galaxy 2 is miles ahead of Mario Galaxy 1. Like, there are some people who are just like, this is so much better. And for me, I was put off because the things that I loved about the first game just weren't there for me in terms of the feeling I got.
And I suspect that a lot of the people who say this game's miles and miles better, and I'm sure like legitimately having tons of fun with the game, you know, quite realistically, I think just looking, I don't think it's too far off to think maybe those people and the people who made Mario Galaxy 2 maybe just happen to share closer ideas about what made the first game good or what makes the general idea of a Mario Galaxy game good. I mean, you know, I think it's just fair to assume maybe that just some people on the Mario Galaxy 2 team or some people making decisions didn't care as much about that aspect of the first game as we do. You know what I mean?
Like there are some things that I thought were really actually really cool. Like the first 5 minutes of the game, it starts off as a flat Mario platformer.
Oh, nice.
And then after you sort of get a little ways in, it expands out to become kind of isometric, like Double Dragon. So
that's really cool.
It's a Mario platformer, but you can move up and down in the world.
Yeah.
And then the camera sort of and the controls, it sort of slowly ramps out to 3D controls.
When Nintendo does stuff like that, it's the best.
But that's really cool, to Sean's point, is probably like you all played New Super Mario Brothers. You didn't play Mario Galaxy 1.
Right. Here's this metaphor.
We are literally going to transport you to. Yeah.
But the sales numbers, I saw them earlier, they weren't a ton different between
Galaxy and New Super Mario Brothers.
I thought they were only off by like a million or something.
Yeah, that game's been on the charts for like years now.
Yeah, Galaxy did not do what it should have done, I don't think.
And Galaxy 2 has not been a huge sales success.
Yeah.
I mean, it compared to some games it has been, but I don't mean it.
Yep,
has not sold.
New Super Mario Brothers, though, is a destroyer
on both platforms. I mean, it's just absolute gangbusters.
Hmm. Yeah. So they should have called this New Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah. It probably would have sold more. I mean, I don't know. The clearly, there is a very specific, focused attitude towards how people buy games on the Wii.
Yep. They buy games to say new.
Or Wii.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
they haven't put those two things together yet. That's the juggernaut.
Well, New Super Mario Brothers Wii. God, it's pretty much got every word in it that guarantees a video game will sell.
New, here we go. New Bros. Super Mario Brothers Wii sales nears 10.5 million.
Yep,
January 25th. So that was 6 months ago or 8 months ago.
Yep, and it keeps on selling every month.
10.5 million.
Yeah.
Well, but how many did Galaxy do?
Not that many.
I bet this article will tell me. Let's just keep talking. This is classic. This is really good. Podcasting right now, me Googling.
Let's all look up NPD information. All right,
well, you keep looking
iPhones.
That up, and maybe we'll talk about something else.
Yeah.
So what do we want to talk about? You know, video games?
Oh, yeah. Oh, reader mail?
Oh, yeah, we could do that. Let's start with the reader mail.
Yeah, we could read a reader mail.
Yeah.
I figure our readers are our inspiration and the reason that we do this, so we should address their concerns in their mail.
That's totally true. If we didn't have readers, we wouldn't do this.
Have mail. Oh, I mean, or a podcast.
It's transitive property.
I was almost a douche.
You were almost a douche. What, growing up? Like, you almost... there was a moment
that was
that
the alternate
think
line
back to
the end
your,
of Back to the Future 1. We're not all douches, are we?
What? I'm a douche. What? Sorry, I wasn't really paying attention.
That's true.
I'm one.
Jake nearly became a douche, but his life
took a
turn. Oh, I was
going to say that I don't do this at all for people who listen to the podcast.
Oh.
Da-da-da.
He does this for this one guy he went to junior high with who won't listen to the podcast. He's like, Jeremy!
He's just trying to cast my attention.
63 pods for you.
It's true, though. I mean, we've had discussions about
like 18 blasts! That comp grenade was special!
Yeah, but we've had discussions about why we do the podcast, and Jake was always the most like vocal proponent of the, like, I do this for myself. Like,
clearly.
I like that people like listening to the podcast, but fun of it is coming and talking to people with the intent of producing a piece of content more than it is giving advice to someone. I don't know.
No, if these didn't go up, like, this would still just be a fun thing to do.
We would still sit in here
it would be way less complicated and easier for me. So I really hope you guys like the fact that we also put the podcast up.
No, I mean, what I would want you to do is put in all the cool bumpers and the breaks and everything, and then just and email
send
it to me.
You. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wish there were more songs in those ones.
Yeah. I mean, if you could write a custom song for every cast, like you said you were going to. When I came on the cast.
Oh, really? Is that
you was said, the condition. Sean, every time you're on here...
Should have gotten it in writing. Bitch.
You wouldn't have honored that because you're a dishonest man.
It's true, though. You did record Love Theme of the Ides, and we never put that on the episode. So it was pretty good. It tops the wizard for meme quality.
I will play some rearrangements of existing Idle Thumb songs at the PAX panel. So there will be...
Well, you're going to play the original arrangements where you'll sort of bring out the looper. Don't say anything. And record all the harmony parts live, right? Yeah. It's going to be sort of, you know, kind of like Andrew Bird type thing.
False.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Okay. You meant I wasn't going to do that? That's correct. Anyway, Greg Brown writes...
Gregory.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Greg.
Greg, it's like 104 degrees in here.
I know gaming's had its share of ideological strife over the years, consoles versus PC, etc. But one war that's dogged the literary community is the question of whether the best genre fiction can be as good as the best literary fiction. Games haven't seen the same genre versus non-genre division simply because
there's no non-genre war.
Like literature.
Most games are within genres.
Except for Minerva's Den. Sorry, Steve.
Game design often relies on picking an existing skill set for players to learn and master. And if you switch that skill set mid-game, it can turn players off. Even innovative games like Bioshock are basically just teaching different ways for the player to keep clicking things to make them dead. On the other hand, literary fiction
PC gamer. He's clicking on him.
I actually know this guy. I talked to him on Twitter occasionally. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Literary fiction can...
He was clicking on splicers, though, not...
Oh, good point. Yeah,
he wasn't
right.
A button masher.
Yeah.
Literary fiction can pick up and drop genre conventions on a whim, disregarding existing conventions and trying to teach the reader from scratch. Genre fictions in games can be really engrossing, but they must find a space for their creativity amidst the clamor of convention. For example, the Half-Life 2 series story and moments of atmospheric beauty squeezed between puzzles and shooting and driving. Some of the most creative indie games use a minimal platforming system as the gameness part of it, and then build the artistic components on top of that. For example, Limbo. Mm-hmm. Are there any games trying to actually completely eschew genre in the same sense that literary fiction does? Or do you think the whole thing is a misanalogy? Is the situation worsened by gaming press that seems intent on characterizing games through a genre lens as an X type of game where you Y on Z? Thanks, Craig Brown. I really like this email.
Yeah, it's a great email. Is he in the Bay Area?
No, he's somewhere in like the Midwest or something. This guy would totally like one up me as like literary douche member of the cast.
Wow,
Greg. So if you could simply send an email to chrisreplacement@idlethumbs.net.
I mean, in the sense that people call me that, this guy is better at that than I am.
Chris.replacement@idlethumbs.net to send your applications for being the new Chris
/ new Chris.
Yeah.
You don't put slashes in emails. That's why none of your emails go through, Jake.
Oh my God.
Readers, just had an incredible face.
I saw a tear well up.
Oh my God. I would give anything for a video or a photograph of that.
I'm so sorry.
Well,
no one said.
This reminds me of something. That's the same face that David Cage was making as he clutched the PS3 to his chest in that famous
photograph in Edge.
And
then people thought it was me when I was told about slashes.
Oh, yeah, he looks like you, kind of.
No!
And
all these horrible things are coming to light!
That's the thing that I wonder about this email, is if he is actually talking about mechanics, like genre, like a racing game, or fictional genres, like a mystery story. Like, couldn't really tell.
I think in this case he's talking about mechanics, but I think you could ask the same question.
Because that's the thing, is like, because what it actually reminds me of is Heavy Rain. Is like David Cage's whole idea was, I'm making a game that is in no genre. It doesn't have like systems that are like consistent. It's not like a game. It's a new weird thing. But on the other hand, the fiction of it is the most genre trash.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, like serial killer genre mystery.
Well, which does kind of provide those choices, right? I mean, in my opinion.
Well, that's also traditionally, it's funny because that's an ambition that I think adventure game designers have more frequently than anyone else, probably because their games have the least kind of systemic gameplay out of all the major genres. And so you saw Ragnar Törnquist sort of talking about a lot about that when he was making Dreamfall, the sequel to Longest Journey. I mean, and I remember when I was like going through like a big adventure game phase in the late 90s, early 2000s, that was something that like was always my fantasy, for someone to make a game like that. You know, I mean, that seems to be something that adventure game designers try to tackle, simply because they're almost working with the sort of emptiest gameplay.
I would completely agree with that.
Adventure game designers also frequently fail at that,
exactly.
Because they don't ever think in terms of gameplay.
Right.
So it's like, oh, well, you know, we can obviously just
do this.
Add these 15 types of gameplay, and then you realize, oh, but then you have no consistent learned behavior in your game, like do-do-do-do-do.
But I do think,
I mean, you're falling because of the absence of the exact
thing
you were deliberately trying to remove.
Yeah, and
I mean, adventure games, point-and-click adventure games have very strong, like, genre traditions as well that developed, you know.
Right, but they're not gameplay-focused. In the traditional sense, or like in the modern sense of gameplay.
They're idiosyncrasies. I mean, they're sort of... It's not learned behavior. Like, people say you get better at them.
Puzzle structures
more,
and stuff, but the actual way that you interact with an adventure game is the stuff you take for granted in every other modern game, of like, click on a thing, pull a thing out of a collection of things that you have, select one of these sentences and speak it. Like, those are just the weird, you know, that's just the stuff that like in a BioWare game or
something.
It's just
the lowest level
like,
form of interaction.
That's just
common to
what you do to
the game.
Get to all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And in terms of whether it's possible, I don't know. I've been thinking about this a lot lately because, this one of the reasons this email really resonated with me is because I've been thinking about this exact question again recently. Just as I've been thinking about literature a lot, just I've going through one of those phases where that's kind of just one of the things that's taking up more of my mind share now. You know, I go through cycles, and I really wonder. You know, I mean, I think games might just inherently be resistant to that unless someone figures out some really crazy amazing thing, or the other potential alternative.
Are you talking about mechanics or about like themes?
Well, I think story, there's no question that over time, I mean, hopefully, theoretically, we'll just get better writers, or the writers will get better. I mean, and start doing things that are less constrained.
Well, but it's still inherently limited by what your core mechanics are.
Right, exactly. And the more
if
consistent
your core mechanics
those
are about killing tons of dudes,
right,
it's probably going to be
gonna
some
up,
kind of
yeah.
fantastical genre setting where you're a warrior that kills tons of dudes. You know?
And the other, like, barring some kind of crazy video game singularity where someone just figures out the, like, grand theory of the universe of gameplay, I mean, the other potential long-term future is that, and we sort of touched on this in the last cast, you know, maybe people just become so literate, so to speak, with video games that the kind of learning aspect of it, the teaching aspect of a string of a particular type of mechanic, maybe that becomes less important. You know, maybe people don't need that as much because they're so accustomed to dealing with different interactions in a virtual space that they, now it's time to do this thing. Now I do this thing. I think that's way harder than it is for any other form of fiction.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you see companies spending millions of dollars on trying to flatten that literacy. That's why we have a Kinect coming out, supposedly.
Right, exactly. You know, but like, I feel like that's just as limited in other ways.
Oh, I completely agree with you.
If
I think
not more
it's folly.
So.
I mean,
because it's
like,
less abstracted.
It's
I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like even
beyond the point where a player is literate in enough different types of interaction that they can just pick it up and do it. And I mean, that's kind of what like GTA is. It's like run around, sort shoot, of, yeah. get in a car, you know, like there are a number of different Talk kind of modes that you go into, and people kind of internalize that. But that said, like, even if it's easy for the player to grasp, each one of those different modes of interaction is a ton of investment right. for the developer to implement. Yeah, and exactly. so it's like, it's difficult yeah. potentially on two totally different axes at the same time.
Right.
I mean, and I think like that's the golden egg, right? Of like game design is figuring out a way to do all these sorts of mechanics that allow you, but on a very like cohesive interaction level yeah. where the types of interactions, you know, the types of inputs you're giving to the game are cohesive and make sense. And one to the other, you can kind of go from, oh, I'm talking to this guy, oh, I'm going through this trash can, oh, I'm beating up a dude, through a series of like inputs that feel like they all make sense together.
Yeah.
I don't know, we talk about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's kind of, isn't that sort of kind of what like Fahrenheit tried to do?
Yeah, but that game well, does, no, that game does it by way of turning everything yeah. into a Simon
Says
game.
I know. I'm just
yeah.
saying like,
but that's exactly that's
get,
what those games
you
are
you have to get pretty
right?
abstract if you're looking for kind of a one size fits all.
Well, it's
yeah,
one of the,
I mean,
the
there's
kind of
a
thing...
game actually that I think is really kind of interesting for something like, did you ever play One Button Bob? It's no. a flash game.
No.
Like you're an adventurer and every level.
Oh yeah, that was
yeah.
cool. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah,
something
yeah,
I brought up I bring up at Telltale quite a bit where it's mm-hmm. like, here's a game, there's a flash game where you can do all these crazy things as an adventurer and you have to solve these problems in very, very specific ways. And you only get one button. And I think it's really as a designer, it's a very, very like smart game to look at about how you want to like limit what you're asking your player to do in a moment and how you want it to feel. Yeah. And it forces you to focus on the presentation because well, you're not thinking about the button because it's one button.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think? That reminds me of an article that I linked on Twitter this week that was about bottom up game design versus top down game design.
Oh, I saw that.
Which
I
is the difference.
Steve also linked that.
Start it and then didn't read it. Yeah.
I read that.
It was,
you tweeted it.
I didn't tweet it, but
no, that was JP LeBreton you're thinking of.
Oh.
You're making that David Cage face again.
Come on,
don't buddy buck
back.
Up. oh, you dropped your PS3. Be careful.
Oh, man.
You son of a bitch.
But it talked about the difference between kind of your square one of the game design being, I want to create a representation of this thing in the sense, and one of the examples he gave was in the sense that a painter says, I want to create an incredible image of Napoleon that evokes these particular properties, and then what are the best ways to go about doing that? And then the other approach, sort of more of an impressionistic or what he calls bottom up approach, is what interactions and what expressions will make the most of this medium in this form. And you know, that's like impressionistic painting or abstract art that starts from what,
like what can these
boundaries like yeah. allow yeah. me to do?
What are the properties of the materials?
Right, right.
Like, what is it about the paint that can be interesting?
Exactly. Right. And One Button Bob, I think, comes more from that bottom up where he's saying like, what can I do from the, I mean, the name of the game implies
yeah.
this very specific design constraint. And he's saying, what can
they
I
don't
do
call it, yeah, joystick
within that
Mario,
framework?
Yeah.
And the guy's contention in the article was that innovation tends to come from the bottom up because it comes from people trying to push the boundaries of the medium. And I think that that's mainly true in games, but I
also from a very confined space.
Right.
Like One Button Bob is a one button game because he's a guy making a video game. You know
right.
what I mean? One guy.
Yeah. Well, sure. Yeah.
yeah.
Of course. Yeah, that's part of it, too.
Well,
yeah, the production
yeah.
process is, yeah, also a constraint.
Well, just,
but,
you're always more constrained from the bottom, you know?
Yeah. And, but...
And in video games as well, making them.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's necessarily true that the top-down approach... Like, I think in other forms that aren't games, I think that you look back at, like, the history of art, and the guy who wants to paint the Napoleon painting, I mean, there are certainly cases when you look historically that guys who came down, who approached something from that top-down perspective ended up creating huge innovations because they needed to find a way to express mm-hmm. this thing that they needed to do. And because there
well,
wasn't...
Well,
that guy's
like,
also probably
that's
being...
That's like the Pixar thing where you always hear them talk about like, oh, well, we had this story about
right.
fish.
Exactly.
So we suddenly had to make the most extreme water tech that's ever existed or
right.
whatever.
Yeah. Whereas I think possibly because of this genre thing that we're talking about, this is how it ties into what we're talking about before.
Ooh.
I think... Here's my seg. I think that often in games, you do see that the top-down approach... You do get less of that because you're working. There is such an incredibly strong, defined, accepted notion of what a genre is in a video game and how you represent a particular experience in a video game. And if you're going to make a game about a conflict, which is most top-down video games, generally speaking, you're dealing with a pretty established, understood system of mechanics, because you need to rely on a player doing that thing for 20 hours. Whereas if you're making a painting or you're composing a piece of music or something, you do that. The creator does that. In a game, the thing that you're doing is expecting the player to operate on some level of skill, right. Probably an increasingly
That's
difficult.
It's very similar to the conversation we were having last time or two times ago.
Yeah, we're kind of treading on similar ground. And I guess basically I worry that in the long term, maybe it's not worth worrying about really on a day-to-day basis, obviously not. But, you know, I do think that this is something.
Don't worry every day. That'll stress you out.
No, I don't.
Will games ever grow?
I guess I ponder more than worry.
I just want to think about you in Boston. It's raining. You're walking down the street.
It'll alone. Be in these crazy sleet storms.
Wearing
that I guess
an irrational
I have to
hoodie.
To here.
Wondering if the games are ever going to evolve past.
But I don't know. I think it's an interesting topic.
Just calm down, man. We'll talk it out.
Definitely be curious to see where it goes in the next, I don't know. Indeterminate period of time to come.
So I'd like to answer Greg's question.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, what's next?
Good. Let's find out.
That's a really good question, Greg.
Did you ever figure out whatever the hell you were looking up on your phone? I forget what that was.
Oh, I was looking for the disparity in sales data between New Super Mario Brothers Wii and Super Mario Brothers Galaxy Ultra Extreme 64.
Did you find it?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
I stopped looking because I started listening to Greg's question, and I'm glad I did that.
All right. So, oh my God, I don't know how to say this.
Gunga Diabetes?
Gijang Chen? I'm sure that's utterly wrong. Right.
Asshole.
Hey guys.
Oh, how insensitive.
In some video games, you have the ability to talk to people and enter buildings. Fact. However,
I like this email.
Yeah,
already.
That good. Seems correct.
However, as the size of the population of a game world increases, the percentage of talk toable citizens and walk intoable buildings decreases dramatically. This inconsistently often takes me out of the experience and has me thinking, why aren't there more games with a compact game world and more consistent interactivity that aren't just tunnel vision narrative tubes of carrot dangling linear? Something in between the linear set-piece explosion game and the gigantic open-world freedom game. The Witcher came very close to this type of game I'm thinking of, and the new Deus Ex looks like it might too. But the game that really got it spot on for me was Shenmue, insert sailor joke here. People can say what they will about the game, but to me it was a wonderful outer-body experience thanks to the realistic and consistent game world. Discuss if good, dispose if not. Thanks a lot, guys. Lloyd. Oh, his name's Lloyd. What? Why'd you front-load the crazy name? All right, whatever. Sorry for insulting your name.
He's probably a Chinese guy whose name is like, I worked with a guy named like Shi Wei Wong, and we called him Webster.
Oh,
so
Webster's
he probably just
cool
offended
name.
That guy again.
I'm sorry.
Twice.
Well,
once the beginning, once
the thing
end.
Was, he didn't want you to call him Webster. You guys are just assholes.
It's not my name for the last fucking time.
I mean, my English is perfect.
his first name.
I'm from Rancho Cucamonga.
He just happened to have a dictionary on his desk. So it immediately nickname was formed and stuck.
It's low hanging. I get it. Webster's Dictionary.
Yeah.
Could have been not Webster. What's another dictionary name? Guys, come on, I'm dying here.
Random House. Say what's up.
Hey, Random
House. RH.
Oh,
how's it going?
This is stupid.
So smaller games where you can go into lots of different places.
Is he talking about something like Mafia 2? Because that's what I like. What
I
everyone seems to say about
Mafia 2. No, that's not what
that game. But I mean,
like, at all.
Far Cry 2. You can go anywhere. There's not a lot.
Oh, everyone seems to imply that the open world in that game is slightly more closed and detailed. But
no,
is it not?
No. There is no real open world other than streets you used
games.
To.
Oh, can you sample that and send that to me? Thank you.
That's my new phone ringer.
That's my new ringtone.
It's your new ringer. It's my new ringer.
It's my new. I want that WB text message.
I'm putting it on my scream sheet.
Faxing into
so,
someone's
I mean,
eye.
I don't
put
really
in
know
one
to,
penny.
I want to get to the
to get
heart
that
of this
page.
Question.
What?
Which Sean was going to say something. Say a thing.
I don't think so. I don't think you. Wait, were you?
He started to respond. As usual, Idle Thumbs intervened when someone has something to say.
Something interesting.
The flying punch of news.
I don't know. I had chicken curry for lunch. And
that's not a good answer.
Gassy.
Famous.
Now that's the thing I'm thinking about.
That's not what you say.
I mean, we're just talking. I mean, I wonder if because there is that thing, right? Where you play an open world game and you go up to a door and you're like, nope, that's not a goinable door.
That's that painted texture wall.
That's a texture wall. Give me a door that doesn't quite. Oh, that door looks a little different. I bet it's got. Oh, yep, there it is. I can go inside there. There's a guy in
the
hallway. He's
going to
say, what's up from a list of barks. Yeah, it's like you want to find that happy medium where there's more doors and more things people are saying and more options.
Probably
those
a smaller total square footage.
Yeah,
so
I
like,
mean, it's the one city block game that Warren Spector talked about 10 years ago.
Yeah, and
right?
Jordan Mechner used to talk about that.
Yeah.
In the context of like The Last Express.
The Last Express
like
is what I was going to say.
Let's do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a great idea to me.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the reason that it's not done is because people don't know what the mechanics are that support that, and it would take a lot of R&D to figure it out.
It's probably also way easier to sell.
I also don't think people scope to that. Yeah, I was just going to say. Yeah. People are like, well, we can sell the five boroughs of Manhattan. Boom.
Right, exactly.
Like, where it's like, well, this is how much money we've got. And the thing is, how much time we've got. How much can we make, and how small can we make that space?
Yeah, because the other side of it is, like, it's been done.
Well, he called out Shenmue specifically.
It's been done as The Sims. That's a one neighborhood game, right? Like, and no, I personally feel like The Sims never gets the kind of recognition it deserves for doing a lot of really revolutionary things, because it's like, my sister plays that, and so people just disregard it. But
your
sister?
What a specific reason?
No, The Sims is a really important game, or I mean, it would be if people took more from it.
Exactly, and it's like, okay, here's an example of every character in the game is an actual character. Every house is filled with living characters. You can interact with all of them socially. There's no violence in the game except locking a guy in a room with a barbecue. Right. Like, and
there's violence that emerges out of like feasible, realistic objects, as opposed to like a deliberately constructed world that thrives on violence. I mean,
and none of it is officially supported. There are no knives or guns or getting in a fight with anyone intentionally.
No, right? But my point is, this is violence that would
in a wall
occur
a
if these objects were put in this actual context. Yeah.
And so, you know, like, that is one approach to abstracting.
But that's not a real game, Steve.
Ah. See, I forgot that we were talking about real games. My bad. I don't know. Yeah, but it is like, if a game is not third person over the shoulder, you know, camera going inside the building at eye level, then it's not a real game.
Right.
It's true. I've complained about that on this podcast a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that you tend to be more interested in the stuff that isn't that, which isn't as interesting to me, which is like more strategy and stuff. But like The Sims saying like, what else does The Sims imply, which no one else really does, is super interesting to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Take it as a jumping off point. Like, I don't know what else to say except like, I wish people were doing that or were given the license to do that, because it's not like nobody wants to, assume.
And I think
you can't get funded, you can't get publishing, you get behind it. I don't know what it is.
I feel like the way you'd have to do that would have to be not just like from the beginning, accept that you're probably not, it's probably not going to be a big marketing point. Like, if you're talking about doing it in a game where you are a direct avatar that goes around and experiences a narrative through a world, I think you'd have to find a way to make it relatively cost acceptable, you know, and then do it in a way where the game doesn't hinge on that being a thing that you're selling the game on, right? I mean, you sell the game on whatever mechanics and whatever like setting and narrative you would ordinarily try to pitch and sell a game based on,
then you have this thing,
right?
Yeah, I think that's what games have to be doing. One zoom level in.
I mean, that's kind of what BioShock.
I was just
going to
say that's exactly what BioShock.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think you basically just take that same approach.
Didn't tell you that there were 1,000 interlocking systems.
No, you're just like, oh, look at that fucking thing. Yeah. Day one perch.
Well, it didn't deliberately sell itself on like the, you know, a lot of the narrative related stuff. I mean, those are things where people like Portal was kind of the same way. You know, I mean, I think you have to just find hooks that are strong enough on the sort of top level, and then, you know, budget your game accordingly, I guess. Yeah.
But I mean, so one thing about the Sims to me as an example or a jumping off point is that, like, I think one reason that it hasn't been cloned at all is because it's broad enough and general enough that it's like, it's The Sims.
Is there
like
more room for that? Yeah, exactly.
Right, and
yeah,
it's like, well, if
The
we
Sims
want
has cornered The Sims market.
Yeah, like, if we wanted to try and bite off some Sims market, we would just make another neighborhood simulating game. It's just The Sims again, right? Like, because it's so player-driven that there's not specificity to it. Whereas,
it's a
like
canvas,
Whereas the reason that there can be a million FPS is because it's like, oh, Doom. What if those weren't demons? They were spacemans. Mm-hmm.
But what if they were bald space marines? But what in the sense of bald space marines? They were bald space marines. And what if it was sci-fi? But instead of that, in this one, we make it sci-fi. And then more bald space marines. See how I'm going with this? See how it's different in each case?
I like what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I just don't know how we're going to sell that.
Okay, well, we could change the bald space marines to bald space marines.
Well, the thing is like, most of your audience isn't bald. Like, and how many people are?
What if
nobody's going to
relate
to that.
Okay, here, get this. A few years later, what if we had a guy with kind of like buzz cut stubble, not huge and beefy, and then did that?
Oh, as like the third one.
Well, then all the other games also.
Oh. I don't know.
What if all the games had that? That's what I'm asking.
If in the fourth game,
what if
a
the world existed
mustache.
As it did now? It's essentially the premise that I'm
what if
proposing.
Video
I mean,
games.
There is sort of an interesting idea what there, right? Where games. If you take some of the interlock, you take, I mean, you say some of the systems of the Sims, it's giant system spaghetti.
It is systems.
It is, yeah. But like, does it just make it feel like in a Sims expansion pack when you decide to like, oh no, this is this very specific neighborhood in the event right. of this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I guess that's what I'm picturing is like, you know, if you did take the Sims, make it one level more specific and one more level more designer
right,
crafted.
It's like, oh, it's the nightlife.
Yeah, does it just make it the herbs?
Yeah, I mean, like, one does not assume you're just throwing extra objects into the Sims, but instead it's like the Sims you play as. Character with backstory living yeah. his life and
I mean,
that's what
I mean, you're talking
about a down and out cop.
I mean somebody's gonna have to
basically what you're talking about is doing a more interesting version of what they're doing with Darkspore. I'm like I'm interested in Darkspore just because I like that kind of game
and
because
you like know, saying like, Darkspore
and because I like saying Darkspore but yeah I mean what they're saying with that game is oh we're taking all this like creature creation stuff from Spore and like using that as the underpinnings for Darkspore. Like the whole NPC generation system of Darkspore. I mean, that's
I think
the
that's a really smart idea.
Yeah, it is. And generally
I'm not crazy
speaking,
about the creative, but like that's a great idea.
Yeah, but I mean, like in the broadest terms, that's what you're talking about, right? Steve is taking obviously they're different systems than the ones you're talking about, but the that notion of taking these systems from a very systemic game and using them as some of the backbone for a more specific game.
Yeah, or like making
like Dark Sims.
Yeah, making the fiction more predefined, where it's like
right.
you're
the Sims,
where you're like acting out the role of this predefined character through those interactions that the Sims are based
Lieutenant
on,
Carruthers.
Sure,
you know. Now that we're not doing this podcast, I've got some time. If you want to do a Sims mod with me,
all right, let's hang out.
All right,
call it Dark of the Sims.
Jake isn't allowed to name it or ever play it.
That's fine.
Not that he would.
Well, because it's a video game.
I'd play Dark Sims, though.
You don't play
that. Oh, no, it's a video game, though.
We'll put it up on YouTube.
Ooh. Right. Yeah. I might watch the YouTube playthrough.
Okay.
You're kind of busy.
I'll watch the theatrical adaptation.
I guess we've kind of been through that. We didn't answer that question. But
let's make some video games.
We addressed the question.
Yeah, we addressed it.
Somebody will do that.
We addressed it and undressed it. Thank you, Lloyd.
Just like Skipper Croft.
Damn right. Addressed and undressed.
So this probably isn't a thing that we like necessarily.
College sophomore.
Have a lot.
Anthropologist. She goes to Tufts. She's hanging out with her cool cousin Lara.
Yeah, I'm doing
in
work
an Aztec
study.
Tomb.
I'm doing work
That's
study.
That's the
with
narrative
her.
For that game, is it not?
Yeah,
she's getting like
she's shadowing her older cousin Lara on her job of a Tomb Raider for college credit.
Yes.
And then they have to solve some puzzles together and do Diablo.
That game, yes. And not
this is also the plot of the young adult fiction series that was greenlit simultaneously.
This is also the plot of the adult
fiction
series
that is on
R.
Johnson.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if you make that game, if you play that game straight, if you write that game straight, you're like, no, of course. I think you've got places to go.
All right.
I don't know. Becoming a woman.
Next game.
They get really sweaty while they're exploring tombs. They
no,
have to take
not
a lot of showers.
Well, I don't think they're.
They're not actually cousins. It's once removed. It's definitely a kiss and cousin scenario.
I'm not even talking about this from a sexuality standpoint.
You just keep trying to pull this away from the brink of impropriety.
I just want it to be a character.
It's a lost
story.
Fucking cause.
I'm
the
not
premise you're setting up.
It's awesome.
Like, all right.
It's a story about becoming a woman and maturity and family.
Okay.
Shut up, God.
Expanding your horizons.
And like shooting
your
T-Rex in the eyes.
Shooting a T-Rex. Whatever.
They've got a T-Rex?
Well, you could...
Wow, Chris, you looked ironically pleased and legitimately pleased at that the most.
I was both of those things. All right, we got another email here.
You don't need to shoot the T-Rex.
You do, actually.
You need to shoot her.
Shoot.
Oh, is she a clever girl, though?
I mean, she got like a 1250 on her SATs.
All right. So...
well,
so this
that's
is
pretty
more,
good.
Yeah.
This is more of a response.
What's so funny, there's
question,
a whole section of our audience who the SAT is now out of like 2,400. No, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was 1,600.
Did that happen?
Yeah, it happened for my little sister.
I never heard about that.
Yeah.
It's like an essay now, I think?
I don't know.
That was the SAT, too, that had essay stuff.
But like my little sister called me, like, what's your SAT score? And she told me, like, ha, you gave me a made-up score, because they don't go to this. She's like, no, it goes to this.
I got a 2120 or something.
Yeah, I'm like,
yeah,
there you go. Have fun at City College.
I didn't even take them.
Can't even research your lie. Go ahead.
All right, so Luke Muscat writes, hey, Thumbs.
Luke?
Yes.
What Luke was that
Muscat.
Luke Muscat, yeah.
Hello.
Longtime listener.
Phantomin.
Sad about the cancellation, etc. He goes along about that for a while.
No, read it.
He says, well, I'm not going to read that part, but he says.
He says, say puffins.
I love the bird noise.
Oh, okay.
I
so
make it
says,
all the time in class. They tell me.
He says, he was mostly stuck working on soul-crushing license titles, and listening to your crazy enthusiastic discussions really helped me stay inspired to stick with it and keep making games. This time, I'm pretty much going to say the same thing, but with a much happier story. Sometime after I wrote to you guys last time, I moved up the ladder a bit and was put in charge of a team at Half Brick Studios. The first game I made with the team was called Fruit Ninja. It's done about 1.4 million copies on the iPhone since its release in April, and it's become a massive breakthrough for our humble Australian studio.
Congratulations.
Yeah, came out of a, got us out of a tight spot and into a new world of opportunity. So
and it's
says,
called Fruit Ninja.
Yeah. He says, I did a lot of the design on the game while listening to your new and old casts, and you guys influenced some stuff that, or you guys discussed things that influenced the design.
We made Fruit Ninja.
We fucking did. We should get credit for that and royalties.
I specifically, put Jeeps in it, you were and when another guy sees you, he runs his Jeep into it.
And then a grenade rolls down
and then
a
grenade rolls down a hill and kills your buddy.
He say he refers to this the discussion about Civilization and I think Blizzard games about like how probability, how it's adjusted to kind of fit player perception.
Oh,
and
yeah, it was
procedural
based on, we talked about that after the Sid Meier talk at GDC.
Yeah. And so
Jake and I both felt hosed. Remember that? Like, fuck you!
Yeah. We make adventure games.
So anyway, yeah, so he just wanted to write in about that, I guess, and
awesome.
He will be coming
to. So he wrote
Pax,
into,
Pax
he wrote into
Prime.
Gloat. He basically said, long time listener, first time caller. And then said, our game
1.6 million
copies. I'm going to go ride a kangaroo, motherfucker.
Basically.
Yeah.
That's so, cool. Cheers, Luke Muscat. P.S. Luke. Congrats slash fuck Chris, of course.
That's awesome.
Luke. Yeah, that was. I thought that was really cool.
I'm glad we inspired your success.
Yeah.
If only we could
inspire our own.
If only we could inspire
our own. Wow, I just got
If
tired.
Only we could expire our success. We just did that today.
We didn't have any success.
All right, so let's see what.
You should have saved that one for the end.
So Chris writes.
Chris Remo writes. Dear me, I'm sorry for moving across the country.
Fuck me.
Congrats
me.
Fuck me hard.
All right, so he goes on for a while and talks about that he said.
Chris goes on for a while. I don't fucking believe it.
I thanks. Thanks,
that was
famous.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
It's less cast.
Anyway,
it's
he says, I should
heat.
Ask a question.
The cat in the hot tin roof in here.
You guys, like myself, are fans of Imperial 2030.
Imperial 2030! Guys, this is how we all started hanging out.
It's true, yeah.
Oh,
it's
my gosh. Point. This is. Oh, I'm getting emotional.
Well, it's how you started hanging out with us.
That's what I mean. He says, I mean the royal
new guy. It's why we started letting you hang out with us.
Fuck, we need a fourth of this
need,
piece of shit game. Who can
we beat?
To be beat?
Brazil. Actually, you were always Brazil.
I was
you did
Brazil.
Always buy Brazil first. No one
remember,
Brazil.
Sing, I would sing the Brazil theme
you
song whenever I'd buy Brazil.
I do
Brazil.
Remember that, yes.
You were frequently Brazil, causing you to win.
Well, then I would
that's
take
only because
Brazil
I planted the Brazil
game.
Seed.
Because Chris,
you saw
a
me,
fan of Imperial 2030, would swoop
in. Grow Brazil, and you're like, I could grow Brazil.
Yeah, that's
that
a really good game. God damn it, we should have played it more.
We can play it on Friday.
I think we're playing...
Arabian Nights.
Arabian Nights. Anyway, so he says, what would you think singing of a computer game version? In general, what do you think of board games on the PC? Thanks for the pod, bird noise at all, Chris. P.S. Congrats.
Did he say there's a computer version of
No, he's
Imperial
saying, what would you guys think of it? And then more generally,
what?
Just...
It's so tough. Like, I don't think the mechanic... I wouldn't want to because so much of that game
that
for us
very
is
social.
It's like it's not as much as diplomacy, obviously, but it is very much... Because you're not competing all the time. Sometimes you work...
Yeah.
The alliances are so...
You're not completing all the time.
Steve is just like
Steve,
a resolute
Deadly Premonition
asshole.
Gainer.
Right, Steve will play Deadly Premonition for the first 2 hours of Imperial 2030. Then he's like, I will buy the board.
And then militarize the fucking board.
Yeah.
Oh,
but Imperial 2030,
but like,
that game,
fun.
They're... You know, since there are minority shareholders who own a shitload of a country, it would be sad.
I'd be willing to try that game on the computer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a game like Catan, I happily have played hours and hours of on 360.
I've played so much Catan on 360.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I've maybe used my 360 more for that than anything else. Mm-hmm. I used to, like, once or twice a week play that with a friend just every week.
That's so funny, yeah. I just recently played Risk Factions.
Is that good?
It's...
I heard it was better than Risk.
It is better than Risk, but that's because Risk is not a very good game.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that's, you know... We all just have assumed that Risk is good because Risk is classic.
Well, because
Risk
it's just been one of those endurance. I mean,
it's
Monopoly is also
Risk.
Kind of
stupid.
Yeah,
it's been the same league as Monopoly. But,
it's
don't know.
It's a good thing the Germans, like, rescued us from the same shitty 80-year-old board games.
I was gonna make a World War II.
I know. I was,
you saw me, right? You saw my eyes just start darting around. Yeah, what do I do with this? So much. No, I don't think so. I wouldn't. I mean, we've had so much fun sitting over the board, and I don't see that
over
being
the digital map of the future world.
I just don't see it being recreated because the relationships evolve so fluidly while playing that game that I don't think you could really do that.
I think it would just be a different game. I mean, there are some, like, I just recently played Catan. I was down in San Diego for a few days, and I played Catan just, you know, this week with some friends. And one of the guys I was playing with is the guy that I would always play online with. And, you know, I think it becomes a slightly different game. Like, the dynamics are just a little bit different. The tone and feel's a little bit different. You know, I would be interested to see what elements of Imperial are preserved or changed.
Yeah, I mean,
computer game version.
I play board games because this is going to sound crazy, but I like hanging out with y'all.
It's not crazy at all.
You know, it's
that's
like
a really,
I don't really
that's
care.
Why I podcast?
Really
like,
legitimate reason.
I don't
reason,
care why what game we're playing. Like it doesn't with the rules or whatever.
No,
like, I like
that's
playing.
Not true.
I like
you
playing,
got super into the weird narrative of
but
Imperial
we were discussing that narrative.
Well, yeah,
we were creating that narrative out of abstract.
But that game. But some games enable
right, like
more
if we
than
play
others.
If we were playing Sorry.
Yeah, that wouldn't have. I mean, that would
I don't
still,
think we would have fun
would
playing.
Be,
sorry,
we would. We'd still have fun dicking
sorry.
Around. But it would be a different. It would be a different experience.
Yeah,
I mean, there's something about Imperial that makes her a particular.
That's true.
Kind of experience that's enjoyable.
Yeah. Sorry,
Boggle. Your goddamn Boggle, wise name.
Boggle.
I like Boggle. Is that our last
cheesy.
Question?
We have a couple others. We might be. I mean, is it?
Do we just want to do others? One Uber last cast?
What
I
are
mean,
the others?
This is their last chance.
We could do some mail at the panel.
Oh, that's true.
What? Why would we do reader mail at the panel?
Yeah,
there's
I mean,
humans
it's only,
there who it, are going to say, I have a really important question.
Well,
say puffins.
There have been people
make
who
the
have
bird
actually,
noise.
There have been people who have encouraged us not to take live questions, which will not be the case. We will take live questions, but they will probably be of a different sort than the
know,
kind we can
reading,
discuss.
Reading
but I mean, there's only an hour.
Yeah, it is only an
is
hour.
Is there one in that room after?
There's one half hour after we're done. But
wow,
I mean,
so
they,
we will
they
be ushered out by
and
forth.
You could always say, it's time for reader mail. Step up to the microphone and ask us some reader mail.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's...
They have to write it down.
We're planning on doing that.
All right. Well, then enjoy that.
I will enjoy it.
Okay, have a good time.
Thanks, Steve.
Have fun.
Thanks.
Steve, you got to come.
This is for you.
If you want Steve to be there...
This is yours.
Write in money
time
at questions.idlethumbs.net.
If you start walking now, you could probably make it to Seattle in the next, like, 9 days.
I'm busy.
Oh.
With what?
I'm shipping a game between now.
Yeah, that thing's not content logged.
Well, no, I mean,
really?
I'm done, but I don't want to be walking up.
You have a phone with an internet on it. You can see what the forums are saying about
that's
your
true.
Game.
Your
that's
den.
True.
Your den.
It's actually Minerva's. It's not Steve's.
About
Steve,
fair enough.
Steve doesn't have a vagina.
What?
Minerva's a woman with a den. Let's move on.
Oh, my God.
Ba-da-ba. Anyway, thanks for listening to the last episode of the Out of Thumbs podcast.
You know, if you don't want to do those last two, that's cool.
All right, we can do them.
They'll just languish forever in the inbox.
We can read a thing.
Steve,
so,
okay,
cult
I think it's really clever how you made up this whole thing about the podcast ending so Sean wouldn't be on it anymore. No, Sean, really, we're not doing it
we're
anymore.
We're going to do exactly the reverse of what Sean wanted me to do, just email him the podcast. We're going to email it to everyone in the world except Sean every time we release an episode.
Wow, it's diabolical.
Yeah, it's going to really eat up bandwidth, but I think it'll be worth it.
It was actually Jake's idea.
I don't put that past him.
But the secret to you guys is that I'm not going to be on them either, so.
Oh, look at that. Booyah.
Oh, we might as well just end
I
it
got
then.
A friend in Jake.
You're just singing Disney songs?
Well, it's because we talked about Arabian Nights.
I got a friend in you is from
you
Aladdin?
Got a got a friend in me is from Toy Story.
From Toy Story.
Yeah. So what's Arabian Nights have to do with anything?
Also a Disney movie.
Well, he just sang Disney.
Arabian
oh,
Nights being the opening song from Disney's Aladdin.
Yeah.
I like
it's a little bit of a leap to Toy Story, but it's fine.
Weirdly, didn't Toy Story end actually only come out a few years after Aladdin?
Aladdin was like 92 or 3 and Toy Story was like 95.
That's super weird to me because they feel like worlds apart in my brain.
Aladdin has CG stuff in it, though. That was like when Disney
yeah,
was starting
to do that.
Yeah,
I know, but I mean, it's you know, like
Aladdin was
part
a little
of the...
Earlier than
what?
That.
I don't know. It's fine. The Escape from the Cave of Wonders is blatantly CG.
I thought Aladdin was like...
It does one of the, it does the thing that early CG in cartoons did where things get too close to the camera and you can see the horrible unfiltered textures and it looks like a quake.
You
for
see
a
polygons.
Second. You don't see polygons, but you see pixels. It's really weird to watch Aladdin on DVD and see pixels.
I haven't seen Aladdin probably in like pretty much since it came out, actually.
You should watch it. It's got a, it's
I
got,
should watch it. I want
to
see it.
It's
now.
Got an
now
Aladdin.
I'm curious to see it.
Hmm.
Yep. Jay was right. 92 and 95, yeah.
I mean, they just seem, in my brain, they occupy much more distant spaces.
Yeah.
Cult of Jared writes, BioWare is renowned for its amazing writing, but I've never found the worlds especially believable. The quickest example I can manage. In Mass Effect, the Asari, the blue hottie aliens, live for 1,000 years, but that information never turns up outside a bit of exposition. Where's the news piece about the Asari welfare mother with 300 children? Or the dude dealing with the idea that his Asari wife will live for centuries after he's gone? Or anything that hinges on that little factoid at all, ever. BioWare games make me feel like a crazy person. Societal details are absent or fail to ripple convincingly throughout the story, which infuriates me and exactly no one else.
I actually kind of agree with this, but in sentiment, not in detail.
Missed the part where they did address human marrying an Asari.
I feel like those games have such a giant wealth of creative content made to build this world from absolutely nothing, and then lack a specificity that he's talking about.
No, I agree. I think that they, especially the Mass Effect games, just end up with just like human that's blue / human that's this / human with this trait, and it just comes out to be the most like lazy just substitution alien rubric that
interpersonal conflicts of these characters. I want them to have one more layer of specificity. Right. Like, no, this guy was saying bad things about me. You need to go get him.
Did you play Dragon Age?
No.
Because I thought they did way better with that in Dragon Age than they did with Mass Effect. Like, I was really struck. That was actually one of the things that made me enjoy Dragon Age, was I thought that they used the supporting details of their world to actually like explore some of the possible like ramifications.
That was what all of the origins were about, really.
Yeah.
Was like, cast.
Thank
you
God
occupied,
you got to say
basically.
That's what all the origins were about.
It's all
true.
All those themes were rising, during the origin stories.
That's true.
But I, even in the game itself, like I thought all the stuff with the Chantry, like the sort of religion, the sort of major, most predominant religion of the world, like there were really interesting gradients of characters, like adherence or sort of just lapsed faith or just lack of faith. Like there was a really interesting spectrum of like experiences people had within the context of this religion, instead of just most fantasy games operate on the principle of like every religion that exists, the god is a real thing in the world and you'll probably see them in a cloud or something, or someone will cast a spell. Whereas in Dragon Age, the world is set up that these different characters just have different like personal relationships with that tradition. Yeah. And like it emerges in interesting ways. I thought like that just Dragon Age to me felt like a fuller exploration of that stuff, whereas Mass Effect, I felt often just kind of like peppered that stuff in and then didn't fully keep itself accountable to it.
Did you like the trial scene in Mass Effect 2?
Refresh my memory here.
Russian robot lady. Fuck, what's her name?
Oh, I actually did like that scene.
Yeah.
I did. I did like it.
And I think that probably the reason that you liked that and that it came to mind for me was because it was, one of the character side quests, what's the word they use? The loyalty?
Oh, the loyalty mission
quest,
yeah, right.
That didn't have any combat in it.
Yes,
and
that was really nice.
And it was 100% dialogue, and because that was true, it allowed them to use that entire sequence to explore the specificity of the culture of this migrant race and the different like views that individuals within that race had of their history and their role in the universe and everything, which was great. And it was because there wasn't an hour of shooting in the middle of it, you know?
Which is great because when you don't bother to do that, you end up with, I guess, just what I was complaining about, which is like, my race is warlike and angry, and it's just like this sort of generic, so I guess you're just like dudes who are angry.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's nothing interesting about that at all.
I think that's why that particular thing was interesting, because it was all about making that whole culture seem more real.
Right.
Because you got to go a little bit deeper on it than you really have the opportunity to with so much of the other stuff that you noted, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Cool, so that's BioWare.
I like talking in video games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
I like talking video games. I like it when video games talks, Jake.
Hey, guys.
Jake has, like, reached the weird point that Jake sometimes reaches where suddenly his body and brain just shut down.
I did.
Jake dead.
Yeah. He dead.
He dead. I think that's all I have marked.
Oh.
There might be more, but
all right. Well, I guess the Idle Thumbs podcast is over forever now.
Sweet. Ending in the most energetic, crazy way we possibly can.
Yeah. We need to inject Jake with something into his sternum or something. Whatever the fuck that is.
Yo! This is the worst end of an episode ever.
Yeah.
I just nobody wants it to end. That's why this has been a really long podcast.
Yeah.
I will say, like, it's been awesome being on the cast, so thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah,
it's
thanks for coming
really,
on.
Really, really good.
This has been one of my favorite things I've done in the last several years. I mean, it's been really fun to have this, especially because, you know, while I was working at Kama Sutra, that, which was a really cool job, it's from a very specific perspective and purview and tone, and it's been fun having an outlet to just, like, talk about weird shit with, like, no boundaries, maybe to our detriment at times, but... It's been fun. It's been amazing seeing how people have responded to it. That was totally unexpected.
I've been really, really glad to have been able to be on it and to be more involved with it as we've gone on. And there was sort of a, you know, space that needed to be filled, and just have, like you were saying, a forum to talk about this stuff and, yeah, get the reader's input on it and everything. Like, especially as someone who makes games all day, it's like, you don't usually get to talk about games because somebody will be mad at you.
Somehow we've skirted under that radar.
Yeah, for I don't know 3 years or whatever. Told them.
Oh, I didn't.
But anyway, it's been a lot of fun and yeah, it's awesome. So thanks for listening. I mean, reading.
Fuck yeah,
Jake.
Hey.
No, I meant thank you. I meant thank you for thank listening to what I was Jake, saying, Jake.
Oh yeah, I was happy to hear all of you guys talk about how much you like this podcast. And thank you guys so much for all of your kind words.
Absolutely. Anytime, Jake.
Yeah.
And so ends Jake Rodkin's The Idle Thumbs podcast.
Okay.
See you at PAX.
See you guys at PAX.
Not
PAX.
Me. Yeah,
you should
I
go,
won't.
You guys should all go to PAX if you're not going yet. They're all sold out.
No, there's 250 Sunday passes left.
Sunday is the day.
250 people
who
can attend
the
Idle Thumbs.
I mean, that they're doing
episode 51. So she'll do that.
Ultra-sode.
Yeah. Mega-sode. Uber-sode.
I was gonna say.
just in closing, don't.
Jake's missed it up a little bit,
Steve. Video games.
Video games. That was fun. That was... Oh, we should do that again sometime.
What? 2 years of a podcast?
Games.
A video is a game.
That's not really true.
Whoa, what the hell? What happened? Oh, that was the break.
Oh, games. I've never met Nick
I was
Brecken.
There when it was cool.
I know. You can meet him. You'll meet him like in
a
week.
It was normal.
Yeah, it was just like
a week
this
from
cast.
Today.
Yeah.
Meet Nick
this guy's going to meet Nick Brecken for the first time in a week.
We wouldn't
and
be...
He's going to be like, oh, I thought you meant Snugglebum.
No, Snugglebum's
and
not going to be there.
Could also
I'm
meet him
for
the
first
time.
Yeah.
Nick can finally meet other Idle Thumbs people.
Yeah.
What is the deal with his book?
I don't know.
It's
I'm
a book
not very far.
But like, it's like...
I literally bought it at the airport yesterday.
But like, they made a movie of it.
Yeah.
Are they making another movie though?
The movie that was made
they
was
made
in Sweden,
movie.
And it wasn't actually a film. It was a made-for-TV movie that got released theatrically everywhere else in the world.
So
but they were actually
now they're making an American
movie.
Well, that's because David Fincher or someone is doing an actual.
I understand, but like that movie got a pretty decent release.
Well, yeah, I think people actually. I thought people it was well received actually.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
know,
weird.
I don't know if it was super well received.
What do you mean?
I think it's
weird?
Just like really popular youth fiction, essentially. Like it's a series of books.
It's not. It's
yeah,
not youth.
It's
adolescent.
Not,
it's
not
popular. It's popular adult fiction. It's like
it's for adults.
Sweden somehow barfed out basically like a Grisham.
But yeah, I thought it was like young adult fiction.
No, it's all adult people.
You're mistaken.
Everyone in it is grown up.
It's pornography.
If you flip through the original Swedish text as originally typeset, there's an animation of a cock. It's sort of ASCII art.
An ASCII dong.
Yeah. ASCII dong.
This is episode 13, the ASCII dong.
It's the girl with the ASCII dong.
There you go.
I've never heard a better cast.
I have all the other ones.
Not me.
I hear that Big Daddy isn't a Big Daddy.
It's actually called a Large Father.
Corpulent Pop.
I think Large Father was a Silent Hill enemy.
That does sound like it.
Corpulent Pop then, please.
Well, they want to keep the same letter, so just Beefy Dad.
Taco Bell owns that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I like the Beefy Dad meal.
Oh, it makes me nervous.
Beefy Dad makes you nervous?
Taco Bell.
Does that stir up memories?
When Sean gets nervous, he farts, but he also farts when he eats Taco Bell. Therefore, Taco Bell makes Sean nervous. That is either modus ponens or whatever the other one is.
Video games.
Or an x-ray of a penis.
Oh.
Why would Steve put an x-ray of a penis on a forum?
Steve's done weirder things.
Video games.
Dear listeners, if this ends up on a podcast, which it won't because it's soundcheck, you should know that the fart that is in Sam Max 305, the city dares not sleep, that comes out of a Max monster, is actually Jake Rockin's butthole.
It's not my fucking fart.
It's not my fucking fart. Episode 13.
You know who's here? You know who's fucking here? The fart police.
Idle thumbs. We're fucking children.
I love we're fucking children.
Me too. I just had a gross experience. Let me tell you about it. Sean, famous, quote unquote, if you could see my fingers right now, they'd be air quoting, Vanaman, reached out towards my mouth.
Chin.
With his hand. It was my mouth.
Hi, readers.
Excuse me, sorry. What?
Don't let him get it wrong. It was his chin. It was in his mouth. Mm. Wasn't going to go in there.
So I could tell from the look on his eyes he was going to go in there. I saw his eyeballs looking at the mouth. I saw his hand going towards it. I knew what was coming.
And then it touched you. He had no idea what was coming.
And then it went in. It was gross. It was the worst. This is the worst story. I'm really ashamed of myself now for some reason.
Gunga.
Oh, I said Gunga Galanga.
I wish sometimes that some people could ever finish a single sentence.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, sorry.
Occasionally. But aside from that, it was good. It's the video game podcast of August 26, 2010.
Steve.
This is...
Steve.
It's
you're really good at the
video games.
Steve.
Sweetener.
What's up?
It's August 26th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, episode 13.